This is a Quality News Network. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and the U.S. Ambassador issued a joint statement today. In it, al-Maliki reaffirmed Iraq's commitment to a strong relationship with the U.S. Earlier this week, he said the U.S. had no right to impose timetables on his country, but today he said that, quote, issues must be resolved within timelines. The U.S. military reported today that one more U.S. soldier has died from wounds suffered yesterday, bringing the death toll so far this month to 97. In New Hampshire, Republican Senator John McCain said that the U.S. should send 20,000 more troops to Iraq. He also reiterated that he opposes a quick U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. In southern Afghanistan today, 14 villagers died in a roadside blast. A NATO spokesperson said an anti-tank mine caused the explosion, but it's not clear whether insurgents planted the mine or it was an old mine. Near Paris, 4,000 police are prepared to deal with any violence that erupts as protesters mark the one-year anniversary of riots in immigrant neighborhoods. Protesters have torched dozens of cars and six empty passenger buses over the last 2 days. In the West Bank today, Israeli forces killed three Palestinians on a raid in a refugee camp. The three approached Israeli troops with weapons, including a handgun and axe. Another was reportedly throwing stones at army vehicles. Near Palm Springs, firefighters continue battling a wind-driven wildfire that officials say was intentionally set. It's now spread over nearly 24,000 acres. Yesterday, it trapped and killed four firefighters in their fire engine and critically injured a fifth. Doctors say he has burns over 90% of his body, kidney failure, and lung damage, and his prognosis is not good. In Washington, a former Bush administration official has been sentenced to 18 months in prison. He was found guilty of obstruction and concealment charges in connection with the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal. And Kellogg Brown and Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, is hiding details about its government, its contract performance in Iraq by labeling all the data it gives to the U.S. government as proprietary. That's according to a report by the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. The head of the Democratic Policy Committee said KBR's work is, quote, the biggest waste, fraud, and abuse in the history of the country. You're listening to QNN.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A new study finds men are losing levels of the hormone testosterone, but researchers who studied about 1,500 men in the Boston area are perplexed as to the cause. U.S. economic growth slowed to a 1.6% rate in the third quarter, the worst level in 3 years. The Commerce Department blames in part the slow housing market. United and American Airlines have both raised their fares by $6 on some round-trip flights to offset high fuel prices. Southwest Airlines said it will not go along with a fare hike. The last Ford Taurus rolled off the assembly line today. The Atlanta area plant stopped production and nearly 2,000 employees lost their jobs. Chevron reported its third quarter profit rose to $5 billion, a record for the oil company, which exceeded analyst estimates. Microsoft posted an 11% increase in quarterly earnings, $3.48 billion on revenues of $10.81 billion. A reminder this weekend, it's time to move your clocks back by 1 hour. The official time change happens on Sunday morning at 2 a.m. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $60.75 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow is down 73 points at 12,090. NASDAQ down 28 points at 2351. S&P 500 down 12 points at 1377. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
can change. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We've made it to Friday. George Bush and his buddies haven't managed to blow up the world quite yet, although there is reason to believe that they still may have that in their hip pocket. Some disturbing stories out there this evening that we will get to in due time. But you know me, I'm a perspective kind of guy, and a bit of a sentimentalist. And I want to share something with you. God knows I'm not going to read all of it. But it's an anniversary, and by God, it deserves to be marked. Can you believe it has been 50 years tonight? 50 years since these words were published. 1956, October 27th. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving hysterical naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night, who poverty and tatters and hollow-eyed and high sat up smoking in the supernatural darkness of cold water flats floating across the tops of cities contemplating jazz, who bared their brains to heaven under the L and saw Mohammedan angels staggering on tenement roofs illuminated, who passed through universities with radiant, cool eyes hallucinating Arkansas and Blake-like tragedy among the scholars of war, who were expelled from the academies for crazy and publishing obscene odes on the windows of the skull, who cowered in unshaven rooms in underwear, burning their money in wastebaskets and listening to the terror through the wall, who got busted in their pubic beards returning through Laredo with a belt of marijuana for New York, who ate fire in paint hotels or drank turpentine in Paradise Alley, death or purgatoried their torsos night after night with dreams, with drugs, with waking nightmares, alcohol and cock and endless balls, incomparable, blind, streets of shuddering cloud and lightning in the mind, leaping toward poles of Canada and Patterson, illuminating all the motionless world of time between. Peyote solidities of halls, backyard green tree cemetery, dawns, wine drunkenness over the rooftops, storefront burrows of T-head joyride, neon blinking traffic light, sun and moon and tree vibrations in the roaring winter dusks of Brooklyn, ashcan rantings and kind king light of mind who chained themselves to subways for the endless ride from Battery to Holy Bronx on Benzedrine until the noise of wheels and children brought them shuddering, mouth-racked and battered bleak of brain all drained of brilliance in the drear light of Zoo, who sank all night in submarine light of Bickford's, floated out and sat through the stale beer afternoon in desolate Fugazi's, listening to the crack of doom on the hydrogen jukebox, who talked continuously 70 hours from park to pad to bar to Bellevue to museum to the Brooklyn Bridge lost battalion of platonic conversationalists jumping down the stoops off fire escapes, off windowsills, off Empire State, out of the moon, yakety-yakety, screaming, vomiting, whispering facts and memories and anecdotes and eyeball kicks and shocks of hospitals and jails and wars, whole intellects disgorged in total recall for 7 days and nights, with brilliant eyes, meet for the synagogue, cast on the pavement, who vanished into nowhere Zen New Jersey, leaving a trail of ambiguous picture postcards of Atlantic City Hall, suffering eastern sweats and Tangerian bone grindings and migraines of China under junk withdrawal in Newark's bleak furnished room, who wandered around and around at midnight in the railroad yard, wondering where to go, and went, leaving no broken hearts, who lit cigarettes in boxcars, 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 racketing through the snow toward lonesome farms in Grandfather Night, who studied Plotinus Poe, St. John of the Cross, telepathy, and Bop Kabbalah because the cosmos instinctively vibrated at their feet in Kansas, who loaned through the streets of Idaho, seeking visionary Indian angels, who were only mad when Baltimore gleamed in supernatural ecstasy, who jumped in limousines with the Chinamen of Oklahoma on the impulse of winter midnight street light small town rain, who lounged hungry and lonesome through Houston, seeking jazz or sex or soup, and followed the brilliant Spaniard to converse about America and eternity, a hopeless task, and so took ship to Africa, who disappeared into the volcanoes of Mexico, leaving behind nothing but the shadow of dungarees and the lava and ash of poetry scattered in fireplace Chicago, who reappeared on the West Coast investigating the FBI in beards and shorts with big pacifist eyes, sexy in their dark skin, passing out incomprehensible leaflets, who burned cigarette holes in their arms protesting the narcotic tobacco haze of capitalism, who distributed super-communist pamphlets in Union Square weeping and undressing while the sirens of Los Alamos wailed them down and wailed down Wall, and the Staten Island ferry also wailed, who broke down crying in white gymnasiums, naked and trembling before the machinery of other skeletons, who bit detectives in the neck and shrieked with delight in police cars for committing no crime but their own wild cooking, pederasty, and intoxication, who howled on their knees in the subway and were dragged off the roof waving genitals and manuscripts, who let themselves, oh dear, by saintly motorcyclists and screamed with joy, who blew and were blown by those human seraphim, the sailors, caresses of Atlantic and Caribbean love, who bawled in the morning and the evenings in rose gardens and the grass of public parks and cemeteries, scattering their semen freely to whomever come who may, who hiccuped endlessly, trying to giggle, but wound up with a sob behind a partition in a Turkish bath, when the blonde and naked angel came to pierce them with a sword. Oh, it goes on for a while. And the single most profound and prominent poem of the last 50 years in American literature, that's all it is, it's Howl, it's by Allen Ginsberg, and it's been with us for 50 years now. And it is still hated, and it is still loathed, and it is still dirty. But you know what? It's still very, very real. Those were people. I saw the best minds of my generation. You know, that's how it begins. Where are the best minds of my generation? Where are the best minds of your generation on October 27th, 2006? Are they, as Ginsberg wrote, destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through? No, they're not. They're not at all. But a lot, you know, there's a lot of narcotic and heroin imagery in that poem. And the funny thing is, 50 years after the first release of Howl, there is more. Says a little something about the war on drugs, doesn't it? There is more heroin on the market in those angry streets than there has ever been before in the history of the world. Where does it come from? Where does all this heroin come from? This scourge of city, town, and farm and country? Where is it coming from? Raise your hand. Yeah, this is just like Romper Room. I can see the hands raised. Yeah, next we're going to get out the doobie. You remember Romper Room? Yeah. Where's the heroin coming from? It's coming from Afghanistan. Some of the damn best, finest, purest smack to hit the Western market in decades. Coming from opium farms in Afghanistan that were reopened and re-enabled by a pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's where the heroin comes from. The heroin that floods the streets of London, that's on the streets in New York, Chicago, Paris. Yeah, Istanbul, Athens, Rome, Madrid, Lisbon. That's where it comes from. It comes from Afghanistan. Brought to you proudly by the Republican Party. Bunch of absolute intolerant SOBs, the Taliban were. But remember, do you remember May of 2001 when George Bush gave $43 million of your taxpayer dollars to the Taliban in reward for their having cleaned up the heroin trade in Afghanistan and shut down the opium farms? Somewhere along in there, the comment was made, listen, boys, we got a pipeline we need to build. And you Taliban fellers can either have a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. This is back when we were hosting the Taliban leaders in Houston. Yeah, Houston. You remember Houston, where Enron was? So that's where we begin tonight. We begin with a 50-year-old howl of anguish and agony that has not abated to this day. And we go to the phones now. It's Friday. It must be Andy calling from Wales. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm well.
Good, good, good.
How was the birthday dinner?
We haven't been yet, actually. It's a very long birthday this year. It's stretched out over about 3 weeks.
Well, you know, make it work for you.
Well, yeah, why try and cram everything into one day anyway? What an excellent topic you brought up for me, Bob. What an excellent topic. The war on drugs. Where do we start? Right, first of all...
By stopping it, perhaps?
That would be a good start, yeah. I mean, first of all, the war on drugs is a misnomer, as are most things that the ruling class try and tell us to believe. I mean, the war on drugs is actually a war about drugs. There is a legitimate element to the fighting drugs bit, and that legitimate element is taking out the competition. For example, the Colombian cartels that provide the CIA and MI5 and MI6 with the drugs to sell in our countries and in Europe, they're not being warred upon. The cartels that try and buy the weapons for their left-wing causes, they are at war with.
They're a problem.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the war on drugs, basically, it'd be over in 5 minutes if they were deadly serious about it, because they passed a law in the World Trade Organization that says anybody found connected with drug money in any way spends 20 years in prison, and instantly all the banks would stop laundering the money, and that'd be it. You wouldn't be able to sell them or buy them anywhere. Simple as that.
Yeah, it does seem that simple, doesn't it?
It's not seem. It is actually that simple. I mean, the people who make the money out of drugs are HSBC, Lloyds TSB, Barclays, and all the other the usual suspects when it comes to banking.
You know, I understand the so-called public safety aspect to the drug prohibition, Andy.
There is none because alcohol and tobacco.
Precisely, that's where I was going. And the fact of the matter is, why is it that that something like that is the only place on earth where our betters have already decided that capitalism, for God's sakes, doesn't work?
Well, I can tell you capitalism does work in that area, because I can take a 5 or 10 minute walk from where I am and buy any number of different drugs. So capitalism's working in its freest form in the war on drugs, technically, isn't it?
Well, you could argue it in that direction. I was thinking in I was thinking more in terms of a free market, because it's not exactly a free market. It's you could say it's a strictly government regulated market.
Well, in a sense, it's a government regulated market at the top end. There's a totally unregulated market at the bottom end. There's quite a unique sort of sequence in capitalism, the drug trade. Just, I mean, you know, there's this big weird, there's this bizarre idea about the whole drug dealing thing. I mean, most people who deal drugs to provide for their own. That's fact across the world. Most people who supply any form of drug just do it to cover their own. And then you go up to the next levels where the people are actually making a bit of money. And those people are the ones that run all the risk, and they make a fair amount of money. And then you go above that, and you've got the people who are growing the drugs and the people who are cleaning the money. And they're the ones who make the best profit, unless, of course, you're talking about things like opium, in which case you make a pittance.
Yeah, the farmer's really not raking it in on opium any more than the farmer rakes it in on coffee beans.
Well, no, because obviously it's in the interest of the people at the top of the banks in both cases to squeeze all the money up to their end rather than down to the bottom end. I mean, it's just another way of extorting huge amounts of money out.
But the fact of the matter is, it's the prohibition that creates the scourge.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Holland has a very, very liberal sex and drug law. And people go, that's terrible, liberals in charge of sex and drug laws, that's terrible. Well, in Holland, the average age of a first-time drugs user is about 16. And in Britain, it's about 12. The average age of first-time sex in Holland is about 17, I think. And in Britain, it's about 11. Now it's gone right down. It's disgusting.
Well, see, now, yeah, Andy, I can extrapolate that elsewhere. We had paroxysms a few years ago here in West Virginia when the government was going to allow video lottery, you know, video slot machines, okay,
right.
And all the right wing churchies. who were, what it comes down to, I mean, it really is free market economics. They were afraid they were going to lose the collection plate to the video lottery machines.
Yeah,
oh, my God, West Virginia will cease to exist. There's going to be hungry children wandering around outside the gambling hells. You know, it didn't happen. And, you know, I drive, you know, I go out and I drive around. I drive past a dozen of these things, Andy.
Mm.
And you know what? I never feel the urge to go in one.
Well, no. I mean, that's the thing.
And I got a feeling if I went to Amsterdam tomorrow, I could walk past 100 brothels.
Mm-hmm.
And not even feel tempted.
I've got to admit, some of the coffee shops are quite tempting in Amsterdam.
Well, okay. I didn't take you there now, did I?
I took myself there. I'm very sorry.
That's all right.
But no, I mean, the whole...
I love coffee.
Well, yeah, coffee's great stuff, man, and only fair trade, obviously.
Exactly.
The only way to go. But, no, I mean, the war on drugs is as much a farce as the war on the tactic of terrorism. I mean, it's all a manner of control, and like everything they do, it's multi-staged. I mean, you know, did they drop the World Trade Center? And I'm saying this personally, they dropped the World Trade Center. But did they do that just to scare Americans? No, of course not. They did that because a bunch of their mates could make serious money out of it, too. Not only the stealing of however many hundreds of billion in gold, which still hasn't been reported, otherwise the gold market would have crashed. You know, but there was all the, what's his name? Is it Silverstein? Bought the plot, insured it for a couple of billion more than it is worth, and then, miraculously months later, the buildings fall down. You know, it was all a big multi-layered prize, basically.
Well,
one element of which was fear and being able to use it as an excuse for war.
If you want a war that's never going to end, Andy, it can't be a war against any nation state, because any sane nation state, having been beaten into submission sooner or later, will surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it's a war on terror or a war on drugs, mm-hmm. you can maintain it indefinitely. Now, I'm not, you know, and let's have people understand, I'm not advocating that anybody go out and get themselves addicted to anything or do anything deleterious to themselves. I'm not advocating that in the least.
No, but you and me are liberals in the normal sense of the word, which is if somebody wants to do something to themselves and it doesn't harm anybody else, then they should be allowed to do it. And if we can make them tax for the government out of it, then why not?
And I also recognize that if they are hell-bent on doing so...
They need help.
They need help, and they will take themselves to hell trying to get at it.
Mm. Well, you know, I mean, our problem over here is heroin. I mean... cocaine is a bit of a problem, and meth is becoming a problem. It always takes a few years to get sort of here from there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the main problem in our towns and cities is heroin. And I mean, the thing about heroin is it's so cheap, it's unreal. I mean,
well, the market's flooded.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the market is flooded. I mean, even when it was in short supply from Afghanistan, it was still incredibly cheap, and it's just been going down since. I mean, I can only see one real reason why the Taliban were felled, and it wasn't, you know, we all know it wasn't to get Osama bin Laden because he works for the CIA, but it was to continue the production of opium. They needed more opium on the market because they want more problems in our internal structures. I mean,
and the year and a half or 2 years that the Taliban had succeeded in cutting opium production in Afghanistan had put a real crimp in the world market.
It had, definitely. I mean, you know, our government support with black budgets and unaccountable tax money, these sort of mass deals of drugs, mass shipments of drugs, it's all well documented. You know, it's nothing new. I mean, the Soviets started the idea because they thought they could destabilize the West if they got all the kids hooked on smack. Now, it didn't work, but the Western governments went, but we can use this to keep people divided within our societies. I mean, you know, without heroin, the Daily Mail, a right-wing rag over here, would only have one topic to beat up on, and that's single mothers. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's all part of a plan. Do they want everybody hooked on drugs? No, because their society would totally collapse. But they do want a portion of people hooked on drugs and stealing from us. Because, I mean, you know, if Britain was deadly serious about stopping heroin as a bad thing, then we would provide it free of charge to all heroin addicts. Because there'd be we would save, I think it's somewhere in the region of $20 billion a year in just the insurance and crime payouts, and another like $15 billion in court and prison costs. I mean, you know, $35 billion is not to be sniffed at.
Oh, Lord, look what we spend on prisons over here.
Well, I don't know how much it's going to cost to provide every heroin addict in Britain with heroin as much as they like, and a safe place to do it and live, like some sort of drug hospital where we try to get them off it. I don't know how much it's going to cost, but I suspect it's not even going to cost a tenth of $35 billion.
Well, you know, it's what society spends dealing with the abuse. It's what society spends dealing with the prohibition that becomes so costly.
Well, yeah, and where is the cost going? It's going to companies that make, you know, special funky black shell armor for SWAT teams and
right, and tasers to use on 6-year-olds in elementary schools. You know,
yeah.
The national news here is rife with that stuff.
And of course they celebrate it, don't they? Look at this SWAT team doing their job, kicking doors in, and you know, it's like, well, who's paying? Why are you paying for those SWAT teams? Why aren't you paying for people to deal with the drug problem at the end, where it's not expensive?
Now, why do we? Why does the United States have a DEA?
Well, yeah, I mean, partly to enforce the drugs on people.
Well, you can make that argument.
Well, it's documented, Bob. They've been in it up to their neck, just like the CIA have.
You know, there was I saw promos for it come out, and I never saw any release stuff on it. But there was a Philip K. Dick novel called A Scanner Darkly.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know if you're much of a science fiction guy.
Yeah, I love science fiction.
You know, Philip K. Dick was a genius. He was also a tormented genius and suffered from a lot of the stuff that he wrote about, if I understand correctly. But A Scanner Darkly was done as an sort of like a rotoscoped thing, you know, where they film the actors doing it and then they doing the acting and then they animate over it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was I saw previews of that, trailers 6 months ago, and don't know what happened to it, but that, you know, that was a cautionary tale that the Western culture could do well to learn from.
Well, what happened is it's a cautionary tale that we could do well to learn from, so the authorities had it pulled.
Well, I know, you know, the internet was all, you know, lots of promo for it out there, and then gone.
Well, you know, I mean, George Orwell's 1984 would never be published now.
Oh, no, nor would Animal Farm.
No, none of those. I mean,
heavens to Betsy, Andy, the Dixie Chicks can't buy a commercial on NBC.
I know.
I mean, I've got, you know, it's partly the visual, but I've got the audio from it. We'll play it later in the program.
Yeah, but who owns NBC?
That would be General Electric.
And what did General Electric make?
Bombs. Jet engines.
Who benefits from bombs being dropped everywhere? They're bombs. It's totally open, you know. I mean, we can see all this, and it's so blatant. I mean, I'm just amazed that Keith Olbermann has a job. I mean, you know, maybe General Electric and MSNBC and so forth are starting to wake up a little. But yeah, I mean, they're not going to go for the Dixie Chicks until somebody else goes first. These corporations are nothing if not cautious. I mean, you know.
Well, this film, and it's already out over there, I understand, Andy. What's it called? The Death of a President?
I watched that the other night.
CNN won't advertise it.
No.
Neither will National Public Radio.
It's actually, it's not very good.
Well, the fact of what's so objectionable in the film, you can't even, I mean, it's tangential.
Yeah, well, I mean, the film itself, it's not like it glorifies George Bush being killed, woohoo, George Bush is dead, you know what I mean? There are a couple of bits where they've taken, like, sort of crowd cheering stuff and sort of put this in as, you know, some of the reaction of the American people, but equally they put, like, you know, people crying and being all unhappy about it and all that sort of stuff. It was fairly well done. I think it was a bit odd to do it, personally, but there's certainly nothing to complain about that these companies should be worried about. I mean, if nothing else, then it's free advertising for the president.
Well, yeah, it amazes me that, I mean, the biggest prostitution ring in the United States is commercial media.
Well, yeah.
And when these people won't take ads for the Dixie Chicks and they won't take ads for a movie, then you know that the information clampdown is deeper than what we anticipated or deeper than what we perceived.
Deeper than what most people would perceive. I mean, I'm a cynic by nature, and I mean I got turned on to people like Chomsky and so forth a very long time ago. I've been watching with just open cynicism and horror for about, half of my life now, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, at least we can say one thing for these corporate media types. Once they're bought, they stay bought. I mean, you know, they are whores, absolutely, and they do what they're paid to do, which is sell the propaganda.
But exactly.
Once they've been paid to do it, at least they do seem to, you know, they've kept their word. They're doing what they're paid to do.
And
it's horrible.
And God knows the administration loves them for it.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you know, it was like that. They had that radio meet the other day, and they said because we had National Public Radio there, it wasn't a right-wing thing only. And it's like, well, I don't know much about NPR because I don't hear it, but I'm under the impression that it's basically like fairly right wing, but keeping itself as centre as it can be. Do you know what I mean? It's a right of centre station.
It's been driven that way.
Yeah, well, yeah
it wasn't always
the others. No, I mean it probably was originally one of both sides get your viewpoints out type of station. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that was years and years ago. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's followed the market, and the market has been led to the right by a lot of investment from right-wing people. I mean, you know, we all know Rush Limbaugh lost money for 10 years. Well, he didn't. He got paid, but the show lost money for 10 years.
Yeah.
It was funded by a right-winger.
Well, that's my personal theory. It's still losing money.
It probably is.
Like I've said before, you cannot pay a guy $25.9 million on revenue that's nothing but Swedish mattresses and herbal baldness remedies.
Yeah. I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out that the amount he's paid is inflated too.
Well, God knows his ego is. Andy, I got a roll, but it's awful good to hear from you.
You too, man. We'll take
Have that. A great weekend.
I'll see you soon, man. Bye.
Later. And onward to Gene and an interview coming up after that. Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad. I'm down here in Portland today. I had a meeting.
Oh, yeah? How'd it go?
Well, that's what I called about, and maybe I'm paranoid. I've been doing this for a while now. See, there's been this big push in the transportation sectors down here for the disabled and the elderly to register for disaster in case there's a disaster so they can be evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, you know, it's like, well, that's nice until one of the other people that were there said, yeah, we've been working with our local Homeland Security coordinator on that. And I'm thinking, oh my, you know, cause I know, maybe it's a lack of sleep, maybe it's the fact that
Gene, you know, when Homeland Security's in charge of something like that, it turns into an Eagles song. You know, it's the whole thing about you can check out, but you can never leave.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm really feeling, maybe I just wanted to call and see if I was just paranoid or, you know. Because I'm not so sure I want to put my name on that now.
No, I don't blame you.
Okay, well, other than that, just the same old, doing the work, trying to, the commutes are killing me, got to be able to get more sleep and all that jazz. So, I'll let you go.
Hey, Gene, thanks for all your help, man. Thanks for everything you do at the network site.
Not a problem.
All right, take care.
See you later.
Bye now. Now, let me do a little setup here so that you'll know what we're about to do. We're about to be joined by a gentleman by the name of Jim Yancey, calling from Jackson County, Mississippi. Jim, well, bring Jim on. Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Glad to have you. And you've been actively involved in a lot of these recovery efforts, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Is it safe to say that among other things, the mental health field is part of your purview?
Yes, it is.
What else are you involved with in the recovery effort?
Well, in Jackson County, to kind of paint a picture that you've got three coastal counties in Mississippi. You got Harrison, Hancock, and Jackson County. And in our county, we were the only county in Mississippi that formed what's called a unified command, where we brought together the four cities and the county together to try to solve the problems of the whole county. And my task, I was the medical mental health branch director. So in the last 14 months, if there were medical or mental health questions, those are the kind of things that I had to deal with.
Well, you and I talked a little bit earlier, and you said one of the problems with the relief coming that way is that it's flowing, well, like molasses in January.
Exactly. That's a good, yeah. We've had a lot of people from all over the country come down. Faith-based groups, non-faith-based groups have come down and just really helped us out and done a great job. The problem is we are in the second phase of this. Not that we knew there was one or two or three phases, but, you know, you kind of learn as you go along. We've now realized that in the 14th month of this is that we need additional resources down here. We've got the people coming in still because everybody we've talked to has said this is going to take 3 to 5 years to rebuild. But it seems to be there's been a disconnect because, you know, just the way that the world is, there's a problem out there, and then you go do a 15-minute segment or a 30-minute segment on a place, and you move on. Well, Katrina's gotten a lot of press, obviously, because it's the largest natural disaster in U.S. history. Unfortunately, what's happened is that we still have folks that are, even though we have a lot of people on the road to recovery, we have a lot of people that have yet to even get on the road.
What's happening?
That's the dilemma we find ourselves.
What's happening to those people? I mean, when you talk about them not getting on the road to recovery, what is life like for someone who is in that shape?
Well, I'll give you an example. I got five calls the other day from folks that just happened to call my office. I run the community coalition down here in Jackson County, and they're calling other agencies. They're calling cities too. But lady called me. She was disabled. She has two daughters. She's used all her funds up to rebuild her home. She's got her home back in place, but to do that, she had to remortgage her house the second time, and she has two jobs so she can pay her bills. But unfortunately, she can no longer work two jobs because of one of her disabilities. And she's trying to put two kids through school, and that's just one dilemma. And she doesn't have the ability to pay her insurance. And so that's one example. Another example, I've got an 87-year-old lady living in a shed down here, and she doesn't want to go on a FEMA trailer. She wants to live with her pets in there, so that presents its own unique set of circumstances.
Can't have pets in a FEMA trailer, I'll bet.
Well, actually, I don't know. I know that there are folks that have put their pets in the FEMA trailer, but this lady just doesn't want to go in a FEMA trailer. And nothing against the FEMA trailer, but I don't blame her. I mean, it's a small place to set up in. And I think in Jackson County, we still have about 8,000 FEMA trailers that folks are still living in.
And, well, I mean, so as far as what kind of illnesses, I mean, those are two very stark examples, what you just described, Jim.
Certainly.
What kind of illnesses are you seeing? How are you able to respond to various health crises?
Well, Dr. Kathy Butts, who is with the Department of Mental Health here in the state of Mississippi, told me at the beginning, at the onset of Katrina, she said, you know, Jim, one of the problems is going to be, based on 9/11, is this. In 9/11, the mental health issues did not peak for 24 months after the incident. Then she said that was a tragic local disaster. This is a regional disaster, and you're going to have the same problems down here. You're not going to see mental health issues begin to peak probably until the first or until the second year. So what we're seeing now is we're seeing folks with depression. In our county alone, the suicide rate has doubled since last year already.
And what kind of numbers? What kind of numbers are you looking at there?
We had a population of about 133,000 in Jackson County. We had 12 suicides the year before Katrina, and since Katrina, we just went over 20.
And
go ahead.
No. Please. All I was going to say is, are those people that you haven't? Are those people that you haven't been able to reach? Or are those chronic problems that haven't been able to be treated since then? Is there any sort of why or wherefore on it?
Well, no, I think that's a combination of both of them. But here's the problem is, another problem is this, is that folks don't have time to go see counselors. I mean, you know, you've got two jobs down here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. You're either rebuilding your home, and the second thing you're doing is you're working at your job. Those are the two jobs you've had. I've done over 60 debriefings myself since June. Of folks still trying to kind of get through this process. And when you ask people the question, this is the question you ask people on the Gulf Coast, when did Katrina end? You get the same answer every time. It hasn't ended.
I was about to say, it's not over.
And so, you know, I know folks outside the area a lot of times don't understand it. I was up doing some critical incident stress training up in Massachusetts last weekend with Paige Roberts from Red Cross, here locally, and the folks in Massachusetts have sent an enormous amount of help down here, and they said, you still have people living in, still have people that have slabs, you still have folks that have unmet needs. Here's the latest information I've got from FEMA for Jackson County. We have 5,800 homes that have unmet needs in Jackson County. Hancock County, which you're probably familiar with, is where Waveland and Pass Christian were, which were completely destroyed. They have 3,626 unmet needs. Now, an unmet need is that's defined as preventing full recovery. That may mean a person may need a hot water heater, they may need a car, they may need their roof repaired. That's as of last month. The amount of money we're talking about in Hancock County is $289 million. That's the amount they came up with. Harrison County was over 5,000 unmet needs have been. These are the ones that have been registered with FEMA. We don't know about a lot of the other ones. And what I'm getting are not calls from folks that are registered with FEMA. These are just folks that have fallen through the cracks that nobody's hit yet.
That FEMA has. I mean, well, how difficult? I mean, there are. I'm not trying. I don't want to make excuses for anybody. But how difficult is the outreach, Jim?
Well, I think the outreach has been good to a large degree, but you're saying, well, how can it be good if we've got these kind of problems? I think the enormous size of this catastrophe. In our county, we had 23,500 homes completely destroyed. That's completely gone. And another 35,000 partially or have major damage. And so we have had groups out canvassing the county with a grid system going door to door in all three coastal counties. And you still have folks that fall through the cracks. A good example is we've got a homeowner's grant program here in Mississippi. And it's a good program. Unfortunately, just like anything, it has red tape involved, and it doesn't fit everyone. So a lot of folks get helped by it, but a whole lot of people don't get helped by it at all. That's just the way the system is.
Now,
one of the problems in Mississippi, I don't know, here's how we look at it in Mississippi, is there were two incidents that happened on August the 29th, 2005. Hurricane Katrina hit the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And about 12 hours later, another incident happened. The levees broke in New Orleans. So when you talk to people in Mississippi, they don't understand what they don't get is, okay, we understand New Orleans got the press coverage and God, those folks need help over there just like we do. But from our perspective, there were two completely different incidents. One was a hurricane hit the Mississippi Gulf Coast and a portion of Louisiana. The other ones were the levees broke. If the levees wouldn't have broke, they'd have been in good shape over there. You follow me?
Yeah, I absolutely do. One seems more of a natural disaster, and another one seems like an act of profound gross negligence on the part of planners.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, and I guess the imagery is somewhat to blame for that, Jim, because we didn't get the horrifying coverage, you know, and we didn't get the stories of people, old ladies dying in attics in Mississippi, but we did out of New Orleans. And I'm not making excuses. Please understand.
And that story needed to be reported. It was horrific what happened over there. Absolutely.
I mean, there were crimes, it was criminal negligence. I mean, I'm looking at a government here, an administration that has just recently more or less announced it's given up on the idea of rebuilding Iraq, and I'm beginning to wonder if they're not giving up on rebuilding the Mississippi Gulf Coast. It seems like they never really set out with a full heart to try.
Yeah, I think my question is how can I worked in the Middle East for 7 years as a survival instructor for a corporation teaching air pilots how to survive in different types of climatic conditions. So I kind of understand the process over there. But here's one of my questions. How can the wealthiest nation on earth, or perceived as the wealthiest nation, not take care of its own? And people in Mississippi are very proud. We'll tell you, we pulled ourselves up by the bootstraps. But we have another saying. I'm from Kentucky originally. It's a horse saying, but we felt like we've been rode hard and put up wet.
Well, it's about the size of it. And, you know, where Mississippi's concerned, it ain't nothing but bootstraps.
That's right.
And been hauling on them for 300 years.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you must sit around racking your brain, Jim, for solutions. Is this something that has a political answer? Does it have a social answer? Are there components of each? Is it a function of people who are perhaps far, far away from the Mississippi Gulf Coast area, visualizing the agony that's going on there and letting that anger them and moving them to action? What comes first?
Well, I think there is a political and a social. I think there's answers on both sides. I think you use both. I think the social side is we have the answers in place down here that can help solve the process. We can, all these examples I gave you, we can help all those folks. The problem is for us, we need to shake the money trees to get money down here. That's number one for us. Politically, there is some money in place. I don't understand the process. I've written grants, and some grants will fit particular areas of need, some will fit others. But there's a lot of money, I think, that's still out there at the state and federal level that has not been sent down here. Now, why that is, Bob, that's levels above me. I don't understand.
Well, again, and I go back to the Iraq analogy. The people have found out, those who are paying attention, that there were instances where in Baghdad, literally cargo planes full of bundles of money, they were referred to as football, they were bundles of hundreds, were flown over and literally they played football with them in the parking lot. And money was just thrown around. Good old-fashioned hard cash.
Yes.
Could do some real good down there, couldn't it? I mean, you're talking about the agony of writing a grant. I would rather somebody take me out in an alley and beat me than make me write a grant.
Look, I'll give you an example. We have a solution for the counseling, the mental health issues. One solution is this that I've been preaching. You know, you can Google my name and Katrina, and you can probably find local things I've done in the newspaper in the last year on the Gulf Coast. But my one solution, and it's not, you know, I'm not taking credit for it because we've been batting this around with folks that know a whole lot more than me, is to take the counseling to the folks' homes, take it right to them. An old seminary professor of mine said, you got to get the hay out of the barn and down on the grounds where the cows can eat it. Well, you got to take the fight. You got to take the issue to them. People don't have the time, for the most part, to go see counselors. So I need money to go hire counselors so we can go at their homes and counsel them at their homes. That's one solution. And in the process of doing that, we can find other needs. They may need to go to a doctor. They may need to do something financially. They may have an unmet need. Another group that is in with us is Mississippi Home Again, which has been on People Magazine. You talk about some folks that have done something tremendous. Had a lady from Montana, a lady from New Hampshire. And they have found a way. They've come down here and stopped doing what they normally do in their lives, and they've come down here and found a way to bring appliances down here. That's the social stuff that has got it going. And those kind of things work. The problem is we have had a tremendous amount of volunteers down here and money down here to initially just help folks rebuild. The problem is we are in, for lack of a better word, we're now in the second phase of this. Heck, it may be the fifth phase. I don't know. All I know is that my calls, not only my calls, but other agency calls are continuing to increase. I talked to somebody from the city today. They're getting more and more calls. I think part of that is because we got the holiday season approaching. And everybody knows, I mean, mental health folks know that when the holiday season hits, your business goes up. But that's without a critical incident.
Yeah, sure. And stress, yeah, stress goes through the roof. Well, I mean, what kind of infrastructure is there outside of the area, Jim? I mean, you need counselors, and you're going to need counselors for the next 2, 3, 4 years. It sounds to me like you need an organization formed along the lines of Doctors Without Borders or something that can move in and set up shop and stay there for a while.
Well, I think that's possible. We have, you know, we've got counselors. I know I've got two counselors coming out, I think coming from I can't remember now, either New York or Ohio are coming in next week to help us out on a volunteer basis. And that's great, but that's great, but that's just like plugging a hole in the dike.
Yeah.
You know, the old Dutch boys. So what we need are to have counselors down here, and we can get a hold of them. I've got counselors that will do it, but the problem is we need money to pay them.
Yeah, exactly. Because volunteerism is beautiful, but, you know, you can't live on love. I mean, I'm not trying.
No, you're right. You're right.
You need some sort of grassroots organization to grow up that will forgive student loans in exchange for coming down and working kind of cheap.
What a great idea.
But, you know, we can forgive Halliburton's loans, but we can't forgive student loans.
Exactly. I just think the thing that we've been doing constantly is thinking outside the box because, you know, the storm broke every rule that we had in the book when it comes to storms, as you well know.
Sure.
I mean, you can go to our website. We can list all the needs we have down here on the stuff that we're doing. But
let me interrupt you for just a minute.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to use. I mean, I'm afraid we're going to run out of time. You mentioned something earlier. You said everybody down here's got two or three jobs. They got the job they go to during the day, and then they come home and they got the job of rebuilding their house. What about some sort of program that would actually bring construction experts in there? Or rotate construction experts in there on a volunteer basis, or I'm sure it could be worked out some way or another to teach people to expedite their repairs and B, do it right, because you know the roofs come off easy enough as it is, and they come off easier if they're not done right in the next high wind.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We have we have brought construction folks down here to help us with that. We've got a number of them. I mean, the coast is loaded with them now. And the part of the problem is you just can't find, on the one hand, we've got a lot of folks there, but on the other hand, because we've got so much rebuilding going on, if you bring somebody down here, there's no place for them to stay. You see, one problem, one solution leads to another problem.
Sure. Yeah. What about the hotels and the casinos? Could they be talked into providing a shelter somewhere along the way, or are they too busy making money hand over fist?
Well, you know, the big thing down here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast is I think we've got 5 casinos open. We're getting 8 more are going to be open between now and I think May of next year. But that's an economic question. They want those things open. So, and they have helped us. I'm not for sure to what degree they'd be willing to go the next step. But I go back to that. Because this thing has been, look, we live down here, and somebody said to me, you know, actually it was my wife that told me this. She said, you know, Jim, trying to explain to people outside the Gulf Coast what happened in Mississippi is trying to tell a guy what it's like to have a baby.
Yeah, well, that brings it home pretty well.
And I don't know, you know, and so when we talk to folks, and when people said this is going to take 3 to 5 years, and I must have heard that probably 20, 25 times, it never hit me until here we are in the 14th month, and boy, you look at it, and we were making great progress. But Lord have mercy, we had the damage is just unbelievable down here. I mean, you got towns over in Hancock County that are wiped out. In fact, we were the Children's Coalition until Now, we've been on the hurricane recovery since the get-go, but we were the Jackson County Children's Coalition until a month ago, and my board meant, because of what we were doing, they changed our name to the Jackson County Community Coalition, because we've just been in the communities working now. And we've also helped children, but we've just had to go do other things, because if we don't, I mean, somebody's got to plug the gap. So that's what a lot of agencies are doing down here with volunteers.
Well, and it all comes back to you got money problems. Do you have a short list of recommended agencies or recommended charities to which you would refer people, some that are doing more good than others or anything like that?
Yeah, I do have a short list, yeah.
Care to share it?
Sure. The first one, we're a 501c3, and you know, we've got to go by the state requirements, but one is us, the Jackson County Community Services Coalition.
Got a website?
Got a website. It's www.jccsc.org.
JCCSC.org.
Yep.
Okay, and obviously donations made there are sorely needed and will be put to good use almost immediately.
Yeah, in fact, you can go on the website, and it'll explain everything. You hit the button that says donate, and you can go in there. And we didn't get this up and running probably about a month ago just because we've been out. I mean, I have four employees and myself. So as someone says, we've been busier than a one-legged man in a kicking contest.
Yeah, I can well imagine.
Another one is a Google search. I don't have their website, but it'll come up. Mississippi Home Again.
Okay.
And this is the two ladies I talked about that are from Montana, New Hampshire, and they start selling brownies and cookies and raised over $100,000 and came down here. In fact, BP just gave them, British Petroleum just gave them, I think, $50,000 last week because of the work they're doing, which is locating appliances and getting appliances down here to folks who've lost everything.
Well,
and this is a two-woman operation. And they run it tight.
It's amazing. It is amazing the personal heroism that you witness. I imagine, and you, in a way, you think of two people able to accomplish that, and you wonder what could 40 do.
Oh, I'm telling you. Well, that's right. That's right. The other agency down here that's very proactive in this process is the Red Cross, Jackson County and George County. I think it's called the Red Cross. I think it's SEMS, S-E-M-S, but it's for Jackson, George County.
Okay, and
they've been very proactive. You know, I always thought the Red Cross just gave blood. I'll tell you what, they've been in the middle of this thing.
Oh, yeah, then cleanup efforts and bleach and ammonia, and because people forget that seawater is not sanitary.
No.
And when stuff gets blown over and gets ruined, toxicity and sepsis can become a real problem real fast.
I give you a good example of seawater. When the storm came through here, you know, and in the hurricane, the worst place to be on the hurricane is when it comes in the wall of it or the northeast quadrant,
mm-hmm.
which is where Harrison and Jackson counties, unfortunately, were at when it hit. I mean, unfortunately for anybody, we just happened to be there when it hit. But when the seawater, the wind was blowing so hard, 15, 18 miles north of us, the seawater got caught up in the wind and blew up there, killed a lot of the trees, but the seawater went into the Pascagoula River and other rivers and killed hundreds of fish.
Yeah, salinated, made the water all brackish, and God knows what happened to the water treatment plants, the sewage facilities.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, Jim, and it doesn't count for anything. What you and people like you are doing down there is heroic, and it makes me feel kind of loserish to know that I'm sitting up here in a radio studio in West Virginia instead of down there doing what ought to be done.
Well, actually, you are doing what ought to be done. I mean, you're on the radio and getting information out, whether it's this issue or whatever it is, but. I mean, we have folks. I met with the mayor today of Moss Point, Xavier Bishop, briefly on what kind of progress they're making. I think one of the silver linings in this storm is we've really pulled together as a community down here. But it's just frustrating when you got the state and federal government, you know, it's got some money. And again, I use that example. The money coming down here is like molasses on a cold day. It's trickling down now, and I don't know why.
It's bureaucratized. And frankly, you know, whenever there's a stream of money, people, you know, hogs are wont to get their front hooves in the trough.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if a little bit of that was going on. It's the nature of the animal. But by the same token, there's got to be a way to speed it up. And, you know, making one guy with a staff of four other people sit around and write grants instead of being able to pick up the phone and say, I need this and I need it right now, that's bad government.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not trying to put you in an uncomfortable position, but it's a responsiveness issue.
Absolutely. No, I mean, the city officials, the municipalities, the county, we're all in the same boat down here. You know, it's a boat none of us want to be on, but we're in it, and we got to find a way to keep this thing floating.
That's
and,
the truth.
You know, if it's not unmet needs, you know, the county's got bills that they've got to pay that they're not that for debris pickup it hadn't been paid yet. The cities have got to figure out how they're going to rebuild these communities that for 100 years have lived on the Gulf Coast. Now they can't put them on the Gulf, can't put them on the beach anymore. And, you know, we'll solve those. The problem is, the big problem is, on this road to recovery, we never thought this would happen. We've got folks that have just either just gotten on the road to recovery or just starting to show up. And how we missed them, I don't know, but we have. And so now we're going back and picking those pieces up and trying to take them one at a time.
Well, I applaud your efforts, Jim. And I hope you can hold up through it because, you know, it's the people working on this stuff are need help, too. And, you know, you guys with the steady stream of tragedy and trauma and horror that you see, that's got to take a personal toll as well.
Well, I think it does. I mean, obviously it does. I go to these debriefings I've been a part of with the hospitals because a lot of the hospital staff were first responders. And, you know, they didn't get debriefed till 8 months after the storm, and it's probably good they didn't because they've just been working so hard. And when you get a group in a room and I ask them, how you doing? And before they can say anything, they start crying. That just gives you an idea of where we are with this. And the problem is, as I go back to what Dr. Butts told me almost right after the storm last year, where she said, Jim, 9/11 is our measuring stick, and it was 24 months before mental health issues peaked. And she said, that was a local disaster. This is regional. So just get ready for when it happens. And what we've noticed is, she said, what you're going to notice is this. You're going to notice that suicides are going to go up. You're going to notice senior citizens are going to start dying more frequently. You're going to notice crime is going up. You're going to notice domestic violence is going to go up. You're going to notice drug use is going to go up. Well, all those things have gone up. And we're only in the 14th month.
Right, and there's nothing to indicate that it's plateaued or leveled, but rather that it's a slope that continues to climb.
Right, right. So it's our new normal, I guess. And so, you know, what is it? The old African proverb says the trouble is not now, the trouble is before you. And so, you know, we're sticking our foot in it, and we're just, you know, you kind of like the story of the hare and the tortoise. You know, we've had a lot of hares down here, and they just run out of gas, and I have at times, but it's slow and steady. And listening to folks, talking to folks, what do you need? Okay, I can't take care of all nine needs, but maybe I can help with this one need. Maybe I can help with these two needs. So, that's what is working right now.
Just seeing individual problems as opposed to the great massive problems before you.
Right. I mean, you know, those numbers I gave you, I think from FEMA, that's like over $500 million. I don't even want to think about that because that's too overwhelming. So what we can do is deal with what's in front of us. Somebody calls me on my phone, calls me in my office, calls me on my cell phone, I can get on it, and maybe I can help them. And sometimes what all folks need is just to talk because they've been going so strong. But so there's lots of different ways to help. But
well, one last thing, I mean, and I'm no genius. Is there a crisis counseling line down there or anywhere that people could pick?
Yeah, but again, the problem is there is a crisis counseling line. It'll take you to an 800 number, an 877 number. I don't think those have proved to be very successful because, again, and not to, I don't know if it's because of the area we live in and because it's Mississippi or not that any other state would be different. Louisiana's a lot like us. I don't think folks want to get on the phone and talk about their personal problems. It's too indifferent. And they're much more comfortable going face-to-face.
Looking somebody in the eye.
You got it.
And maybe, for that matter, talking to somebody that talks like them.
Exactly.
Well, I understand all of it. I do. I wish I had solutions. But I thank you for sharing what you have, and I hope that maybe we can get some word out and get some help out. And, you know, that's the beauty of what we're doing here is somebody's hearing this right now. God willing, Jim, they're hearing this right now, and they're going to talk to somebody else, and it's the pebble thrown into the pond.
Exactly. Having a ripple effect. Yeah, exactly.
So with any luck, the right person will hear this, and maybe, just maybe, by some form of grace, you'll get some of the help you need.
Super.
Jim, thank you very kindly. And please, I hope we'll hear from you again. Update us. Don't let us forget this. If there's nowhere else in the United States of America that will pay attention to this, by God, it is here that we will.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll update you then.
All right. I appreciate it. You take care and have the best few days that you can.
Thank you, Bob. I will.
All right. Take care, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Jim Yancey, Jackson County, Mississippi. Agnes, can I see the, there's too many alphabet. Can I see the website, please? JCCSC.org. JCCSC.org. If you haven't had a chance to write it down, it will go on the website. And again, if you don't have money to send, that's okay. Do you know somebody who does? Do you know somebody who knows somebody? This is all about opening doors. If you look, pardon me, because I may very well have an aneurysm here. We've talked about these filthy political advertisements that have been running all over the country. Especially the millions, dear Lord Jesus, the millions that have been spent in Tennessee to slur a man for having the unmitigated gall to want a political office. You want a reason for real, meaningful campaign finance reform? You want a reason for why there should be public financing of campaigns? Look at the millions that have been spent on nothing but damn hate! And look at the good it could have done if this bunch of soulless, godless, motherless Republicans had only cared more about human beings than they do about power! Sorry. Let's go to the news. This is Head On.
Keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and the U.S. Ambassador issued a joint statement today reaffirming Iraq's commitment to a strong relationship with the U.S. The announcement followed a controversy over policy earlier this week when al-Maliki said that the U.S. had no right to impose timetables on his country. Today he said that, quote, issues must be resolved with timelines. The U.S. military reported today that one more U.S. soldier has died in Iraq, bringing the death toll so far this month to 97. In Morocco next week, the U.S. and Russia will lead a meeting to address nuclear terrorism. The participating countries, including Britain, China, France, Germany, Japan, and Italy, will discuss how to keep extremist groups from obtaining nuclear materials. In New Hampshire, Republican Senator John McCain said today that the U.S. should send 20,000 more troops to Iraq. He also reiterated that he opposes a quick U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. NBC News reports that in the Persian Gulf, coalition naval forces are on heightened alert. British authorities have cited a possible al-Qaeda threat against oil refineries in the Gulf. Saudi Arabia is also taking precautions to protect its interests. U.S. forces in Baghdad are still searching for a U.S. soldier who was kidnapped earlier this week. They've reportedly cordoned off the area around Sadr City, a slum controlled by the anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, as they continue their search. Near Paris, protesters torched two empty passenger buses today as demonstrations marking the one-year anniversary of riots in immigrant neighborhoods continued for the second day. 4,000 police are standing by. In the West Bank today, Israeli forces killed three Palestinians on a raid in a refugee camp. Near Palm Springs, brush and winds continue driving the Esperanza blaze, which has now spread over nearly 24,000 acres. Four firefighters were killed when the flames engulfed their fire engine. Authorities say that the fire was started deliberately, and the Associated Press reports that a $300,000 reward is being offered for information leading to the arsonist's capture. On Monday, the first ever UN Global Summit on the Internet will convene in Greece. 1,200 international delegates and policymakers will meet to discuss, among other issues, the U.S. control over Internet addressing protocols. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Health Department investigators now say that wild pigs may be responsible for tracking E. coli bacteria into a California spinach field in August. The nationwide E. coli outbreak caused the deaths of three people and sickened about 200. A reminder this weekend, it's time to move your clocks back by 1 hour. The official time change happens on Sunday morning at 2 a.m. In the third quarter, U.S. economic growth slowed to a 1.6% rate, the lowest level in 3 years. The Commerce Department says that the slumping housing market is largely responsible for the slowdown. However, the University of Michigan's survey of consumer sentiment found that U.S. consumers' mood brightened in October, mostly because of lower gasoline prices. Consumer spending makes up two-thirds of economic activity in the U.S. United and American Airlines have both raised their fares by $6 on some round-trip flights to offset high fuel prices. Southwest Airlines said it will not go along with the fare price. In Georgia, the last Ford Taurus rolled off the assembly line today. The Atlanta area plant stopped production and nearly 2,000 employees lost their jobs. Light sweet crude settled at $61.62 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 73 points at 12,090. The NASDAQ was down 28 points at 2351. And the S&P 500 was down 12 at 1377. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, the second hour starts a little bit late, but that's okay. Well worth it. You know, it boggles my mind when I think of people who are so obsessed with power that they can't imagine using. Can think about the war chest of the Republican Party. Think about the somewhat more modest war chest of the Democratic Party. Can you imagine in the face? Can you imagine one thing in this nation that might reinvigorate patriotic zeal, patriotic spirit, than if both parties said, "Look it." The money we would spend on political advertising this year, we're not going to spend. We're going to rebuild what desperately needs rebuilt in America. And we will return to our same vile, filthy, vitriolic ways as soon as the job is done. But for the time being, you voters are just going to have to figure it out for yourself. Well, that wouldn't work so well, would it, though? Because Merck didn't give $1 million to the Republican Party to have them go frittering it away on human beings. No, sir. And Halliburton didn't give away millions to the Republican Party to go have them waste it on something as frivolous as ending misery. Oh, no. No, no, Lord Jesus, no. But, you know, that's the kind of America that would make you proud to live in it. An America where people can put aside their differences long enough to fix what's broken. Yeah, I know, they're going to cart me away in one of those cool jackets with the sleeves that tie in the back for talking such nonsense. Because, frankly, the Republican Party, look at, they're spending millions upon millions of dollars to retain power so they can keep screwing up what they've screwed up already. Hmm? Yeah. These are political problems. These are social problems. But the political problems are problems, and there's a difference. The political problems are problems that were not acts of God or acts of chance or acts of accident. The political problems we have with the recovery from Katrina are intentional acts. They are intentional acts. They were done on purpose. And I'm not talking about saying somebody planted a bomb in the levees. I got a story in the stack here. It turns out it's a protege of Karl Rove, who was responsible for that filthy, disgusting ad in Tennessee. Oh, yeah. You want the fun part? You want the cherry on top of the whipped cream on the Tennessee ad story and the guy who produced it? Here's the fun part. He's been hired by John McCain. Oh, yeah, baby. Let's go to the phones. Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, the other part of the story is, now, nobody may know who this guy's name is when they first hear it is this is the same guy who ran Saxby Chambliss's ads.
Dang straight.
When they morphed Max Cleland into Osama.
Yes, it is.
I mean, this is that same brain trust. So.
And studied at the foot of the master, just lived and breathed Karl Rove's teaching.
You know, it's just amazing, I tell you what. All right, let me get the media minute out of the way.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Tonight on C-SPAN, the best one I saw is, I think, about an hour, and they repeat it overnight sometime, is the Vermont Senate debate with Bernie Sanders. If you ever want to hear somebody who I think makes a whole lot of sense, is Bernie Sanders.
Sure he does.
You know what I mean? And he comes at it from, I'll use the word, and it's not exactly the strict use of it, but he comes at it almost from a socialist point of view.
He ran as a socialist until he decided he was independent instead.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? When you listen to him talk, he makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
But, okay, tonight on Mr. Marr's show, by screen, I don't know if it'd be the first one or the last one, his two guests on the screen, you know, where he does his little glass wall thing. Well, one of them is Miss Arianna Huffington, and the other one is Harold Ford.
Well, I'm sure that Harold Ford will be gracious and decent. He's pretty much kept to the high road in all of this.
And the guests tonight on Marr's show, the two they had listed were Andrew Sullivan, who, I tell you what, lately I've been enjoying listening to Andrew Sullivan because he's been bashing Bush as bad as anybody.
Yeah, true enough.
And Harry Belafonte.
Oh my! There will be some darts thrown.
You know, I was going to say it's going to get interesting. And then tonight on Letterman, did you see who their guest is?
Oh yeah! In fact, I've already read the advance of what goes down.
It's round two. Bill O returns.
Yeah, he's going to come out with a little plastic sword and a little plastic shield, and it just all goes straight to hell from there.
My VCR messed up. We're having rain here, so we had a power dip. So I'd set the VCR today. Apparently, Bill O did an hour, his hour with Oprah today.
Oh, Lord.
Which, like, oh, God, I'm just sorry I missed that. I hope the boys aren't crooked liars, have something good off of that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that they won't miss that.
So that. And one for you personally. 1 a.m. tonight, this morning, on Sci-Fi Channel, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, my son's a big Mothman fan, Luke. Well, we own it. We have to watch it from time to time.
I was going to say, well, like I say, there's a Sci-Fi investigates Mothman. It's like at 1 a.m.
May have to record it for him.
Yeah,
that and the Braxton County Beast. He's into that stuff right now.
Well, I just saw that. I thought you'd really enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, don't look it up. Don't look at us down here. We still have the Bell Witch. So.
Well, you know, I took him with me down to Alabama a few months ago when I was down there with my dad, and a friend of the family gave him a couple of books on local ghosts down in the Shoals area, and there's a ghost down there that's simply called the Hollering Thang. And I mean, he is all over himself over the Hollering Thang.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's already had the map out. He's found the road where the Hollering Thang's supposed to do its hollering. And I'm under strict orders next time we get down there that he gets to go and listen for the Hollering Thang.
Well, I say get him out his library card, send him to the library, and tell him to, you know, get on some of these. There's you know, in the Southeast, there's so many good stories on that. You can just, you know, spend the whole night doing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, he loves his ghost stories, but then it's a little tough to get him to sleep.
I understand. But two other things. I tell you what. You know, I thought some people in the Democratic Party had a brain cell or two. But I tell you what. These people out in California, it's like you watch this thing with everybody just falling over their feet in the media over the Arnold. It's like you just want to go, what are you people thinking?
Well,
I mean, Arnold turns left for 3 months so he can get reelected. Right after the election, you all are dead meat.
and frankly, you know, this is about delivering California in 08. There will be, in the political parlance of the South, some sweetening in it for Arnold if he does that.
You know, it's just amazing. Though, I mean, when you see some of these people and you're just wanting to go, you know, are you all, did somebody cut off your oxygen? What? You know, it's like, you know,
I don't think it's got anything to do with oxygen, Luke.
I mean, their brains apparently are not functioning.
I know, but there's other ways to make that happen.
I know. More enjoyable ways, yes, indeed. But, oh, yes, to talk about that, let's talk about the OxyContin kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of these things, it's like...
I'm hoping he's quietly putting an end to his career.
It's one of those things, it's like, you know, he may have stepped over that line. We've always been waiting for him to do it. This may not be it, but this has got to be awful dang close. Because, like I say, I haven't, you know, of course, all the fundies and all that, you know, they're all on his side. But I tell you what, all across the board, everybody's kind of like just chewing him up. And I'm enjoying it so much.
Well, you know, he's gotten to the point where he's saying, my friends, I have an army of 20 million people getting my back.
When he first came on, you know, they started carrying all this stuff. And a couple of people, I remember when they used to have I probably still got copies of it laying around somewhere, when they used to have the old Flush Rush Quarterly. And the guy that did that used to say, you know how they get those numbers sometimes, don't you? Said some of them, they were running Rush in service stations. So they would count the number of people who came through the service station that day as listeners.
Sure. And the thing is, that's one of the frauds of the radio business is Arbitron. Because the fact of the matter is, Arbitron can't really tell you, you know, they can tell you that they estimate that X number of people listened, but what they can't tell you is whether X number of people paid attention.
Or keep listening.
Right.
It's like they may have just walked through the room as far as they know.
See, that's why what we're doing here is so much a part of the future, Luke, because as John Fox noted and I've noted, nobody comes to this program by accident.
You might the first time, you know what I mean, just seeing what it is, but after that, you know where you're going.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, I can't think of what you would type and be meaning to type and type headonradionetwork.com.
It's one of those things, you know, it's like I always say, Lincoln is one of the fun things I love doing on the net. It's like, I'll be honest, the first person I ever really listened to when I first started listening on the net was, she's still on the air, used to be Aaron Hart.
Yeah.
And I found Aaron Hart, and somehow that led me to White Rose, you know, through some weird thing got me to White Rose. And White Rose is where I found everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been on those trips down the rabbit hole on the internet. You know,
how in the heck did I get here?
Yeah, you start out one place and you wind up in the Kennedy assassination, and from there you're on a really good brownie recipe.
And you're going, you just like pull out my history. I want to see exactly how this road led, boy, because I tell you what, this thing had to be a corkscrew and a half.
I don't need to be left alone with computers anymore.
No, but. It's one of these things. It's like I say, I'm just really hoping the OxyContin kid finally got it, is going to get his just rewards. But on the Harold Ford thing, have you noticed though, when the national people talk about it, other than people we listen to, you know what I mean, on the left,
yeah,
no one talks about the TomTom commercial.
No,
what I call it.
Yeah, and see, I don't. You probably Agnes, can you fire up the new parody? We've got a new parody ad out. I listened to these Harold Ford ads so long I felt like I finally just had to do my own. So I've run it a couple of times today. But those TomToms really grabbed me.
Well, I'll say I'd listened to it a dozen times and I never paid attention to it per se. And I heard somebody over on Randy Rhodes call in and mention it to her. And next time I heard it, I just sit there, just close my eyes and listen to it. And it's like, damn, you ain't even gonna try hard to hear it.
No, you don't. Or like the angel sounds whenever they're doing corker.
Yeah. And it's like, God, it's like welcome to the world of subliminal advertising.
Well, here I'll share this with you now since I've got you, and share it with the audience as well. This is what it boils down to is I decided to that the Republican National Committee needed an ad that wasn't quite as subtle as the last one, because, some of these people that you're trying to play the race card to aren't real arpshay on the uptake, if you know what I mean. Okay, so here we go.
Paid for by the Republican National Committee. Ken Melman, Grand Cleagle.
Harold Ford, don't share our Tennessee conservative family values.
Eustace, get that sheet off of your head and come in here right now, little mister.
Be earned a minute, Uncle Daddy. Harold Ford's gonna get our women's.
Tom Toms.
Hey, where are the white women at?
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Oh, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true.
Oh, what a nice guy.
Bob Corker for Senate. It's an 18th century thing. You wouldn't understand.
I wish I had a good email address for the Republican National Committee, because I'd love to send them that.
Oh, it's like you were talking earlier, about Animal House. I mean, I'm saying that. Animal Farm?
Yeah.
It's like, today you couldn't get Blazing Saddles made. They'd run you out of a studio.
Oh, no, and you couldn't do half the stuff that Saturday Night Live did in its first 2 years of existence either.
I tell you what, there's some of these people out there, you're just kind of sitting there going, Oh, well, the other night, what was it, Stephanie Miller and he whose name I won't mention were on Larry King and Big Eddie.
Yeah.
And they had Bortz on and somebody else they were arguing with. And Stephanie Miller made the comment that, it was like the people watching Springtime for Hitler, when they did something, when they first watched the Ford commercial. And, of course, the first thing Neil Bortz said was, I knew they'd bring up a Hitler reference. And Stephanie Miller the next day was going, you dummy, it's not a Hitler reference. It's a Mel Brooks reference.
Yeah, see, subtlety is lost on these pinheads on the right.
Oh, but I tell you what, I see it's the bottom of the hour. Let you go, and you all have a good weekend.
All right, you take care, Luke. Good weekend to you, too.
All righty.
See
ya. See ya.
Bye now. And it is time for our bottom of the hour break. Let's check in and see what's happening over at laborradio.org, the Workers' Independent News Service. If you want to get in on the conversation, please feel free to do so. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Although a bankruptcy court judge has ruled Masaba Airline workers cannot strike, they're still planning to protest. Jesse Russell has the story.
Masaba Airlines plans to impose pay and benefit cuts today after bankruptcy court judge ruled earlier this week that workers could not strike or take any action resembling a strike, such as a work slowdown. The pilots, flight attendants, and mechanics plan to hold pickets at the federal courthouse in Minneapolis this afternoon. They have appealed the ruling by Judge Gregory Kishel and are considering picketing the airport. Flight attendants from Northwest Airlines have said they plan to join in the rally. Mechanics will have wages cut by more than 10%, while flight attendants and pilots will see cuts of 6%.
Organized labor is out in force mobilizing voters for the November 7th elections. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says his union is very active and expects some good results at the ballot box.
The Teamsters have a complete plan of basically a field operation and giving monies to candidates, contributions from our drive program. We're very active, and we believe we're going to elect a Democratic governor in Ohio, and we're going to keep a Democratic governor in Michigan. We're going to beat Rick Santorum in Pennsylvania. So there's a lot of good things going on out there.
The Teamsters say they're cooperating with the AFL-CIO in an effort to elect a working family-friendly Congress in November. The SEIU is appealing to building owners in Houston to sign pledges supporting more money for health insurance and pay raises for janitors. 5,300 janitors are seeking raises to $8.50 an hour, health insurance, and a guaranteed minimum of 30 hours of work per week. Five big cleaning companies in Houston say they can't afford those improvements without getting more money from building owners. SEIU says Houston has the lowest paid janitors of any major U.S. city. Several hundred janitors have taken part in a partial work stoppage against five big cleaning companies in Houston. Shell oil platforms in the Niger Delta have been shut down. Villagers have seized the platforms, accusing the company of failing to provide promised aid. A nearby Chevron platform also shut down as a preemptive measure. It's unclear what's happened to the workers who were on the platform at the time of the occupation. Militants have taken oil workers hostage in the past to demand ransom or increased local control of oil wealth. Here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
Last month, the cost of single-family homes made its biggest decline in 37 years, with sales of previously owned homes declining to the lowest level in 3 years. The median price of a single-family home has fallen by 2.5% since September 2005. Home sales have dropped every month since March. The slump in residential real estate is tugging back economic growth, and economists are projecting that the decline will continue until at least the middle of 2007.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
God forgive our warring ways. Blessed is the peace we'll make. When someday we walk like Him, God forgive our warring ways. Tried
26 minutes before the hour, halfway done with this Friday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And joining us on the phone right now is Ohio gubernatorial candidate from the Green Party, Bob Fetrakis. Bob, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. You've had a very busy day, I understand.
Well, a lot of things happening in Ohio.
Well, one of the things that you've been especially effective at, and I congratulate you on, is trying to keep a handle on some really sleazy vote suppression issues there in Ohio, and that was particularly what I was referring to. You had some big doings today, didn't you?
We were in court. We have filed the Civil Rights Act action. I've of counsel in the case. From the 04 election against J. Kenneth Blackwell, who was made famous for his role in delivering the vote to George W. Bush, where he acted as the very partisan co-chair of that campaign, the Catherine Harris.
The Catherine Harris of 2004 in all.
Sure.
Pardon, yeah.
And, what happened today is we had been dealing with a lot of information, and we came up with information late last week that they were disenfranchising, it looks like 5 to 10% of the voters who had voted absentee, particularly in the large urban areas. The identification law that went into effect, House Bill 3, which is just a notorious voter suppression bill, requiring all types of ID. But the beauty of what was going on to disenfranchise primarily Democratic voters in these large urban areas is the Ohio driver's license has two different numbers on it. It has a very large number, which is an administrative identifier number over the picture. And then it has a much smaller number that's your actual driver's license that includes its alphanumeric as opposed to numeric. And people were coming in and putting the larger, more visible number as their identifier.
Golly, Moses.
The people down there said that, you know, their ballots weren't going to be counted. There was already 5,000, according to the Franklin County Board of Election, that had been set aside not to be counted. So we already had a pre-existing case. So a homeless coalition finally, the Democratic Party, some Democratic Party, not actually representing the party, but some attorneys that are associated with, as Democrats actually came in and filed suit. Yesterday there was a complete halting of this law as unconstitutional, essentially depriving people of votes and counting votes unevenly. Some counties, primarily rural counties, were counting them, counting every vote that came in, regardless of which identification. And then the urban areas, just like in 2004, were throwing people out. So,
well, just out of curiosity, Bob, does it break out urban to rural on a racial divide?
Of course it does.
Just checking.
Yeah, the Miami. What we found is Miami County that was 2% African-American decided in 2004 and has continued this policy this year to be a no-purge county. So no one would be purged in that county. In fact, their policy is they use a merge policy. They'll even allow voters in other counties to vote in their county if they say they've moved there. But in Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, 24.93% of all of the registered voters in Cleveland had been purged between 2000 and 2004. And you were finding those sort of similar patterns emerging again, where the ballots being thrown out are overwhelmingly in the large urban counties, Cleveland, City of Columbus, Toledo. But the rural counties were allowing virtually any form of voter registration.
Well, why, Bob? I mean, you're a lawyer.
Well, I think why? Because they can get away with it. Because the entire state is controlled by the Republican Party. It's one-party rule.
Well, I understand that. But after Bob Ney, after Governor Taft, I mean, a sitting governor with a conviction, how charming. It's just like the White House. What is this? Is this turning in Ohio? Do you think?
Well, I think the problem is they're really worried about what happens in this election, right? If Jennifer Bruner gets elected Secretary of State, she's going to re-enfranchise the voters. They can't win with the existing electorate. I mean, these are deliberate plans to shrink the electorate. If Mark Dan wins as Attorney General, he has the power to go after the election tampering charges from 2004.
Is that something he's evinced a willingness to do?
Yeah, no, he has. He actually a couple weekends ago appeared at the voting rights conference. Although he was a little nervous, you know, he showed up in the belly of the beast of myself and all the other people who have been filing the suits and compiling the evidence, and we pressed him very, very hard. And he's now on the record that he will, in fact, look at the evidence and go after what we, in fact, have managed to accumulate out of the public record. Also, I think there's tremendous fear if they lose this election. You get the potential of Representative John Conyers running around with a subpoena on the Judiciary Committee, and I think that's their greatest nightmare.
Well, now, it's my understanding that Blackwell is not, who is it, Ted Strickland is the Democratic nominee?
Yeah.
It's my understanding Blackwell is some several points behind him in the polls. Is that correct?
Well, I watch the polls daily. The last poll that came out, Blackwell was actually down 30 points. And this is a huge drop. He's never been closer to than 12 in any poll. And most of the polls have shown him consistently, you know, 16 to 20 points down. He's been doing push polls in Ohio, essentially saying that, you know, what would you do if you found out that Strickland hired a child molester on his staff? And then it was, and if you still say, I'm still voting for Strickland, what would you do if you found out Strickland took a vacation with that child molester? So these are those notorious push polls to say, you know, the mark of Rove, the same one that suggested
that John McCain had a black baby. Yeah.
Yeah. With it, and then the people go on radio and suggest it was with a hooker.
Same bunch. I mean, sometimes I think they're not creative because they just use the same garbage, you know, election after election after election.
Yeah, it's a template. And, you know, at this time, though, people appear not to be falling for it, particularly here in Ohio. I mean, people are just the Republican newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch, which hasn't endorsed a Democrat for president since Woodrow Wilson. And that's because the family was German in 1916, actually, spanked back at Blackwell, found someone on his staff who was a convicted felon, failed to disclose it, drug dealer with cocaine, and then soon after leaving employment, ended up molesting a child. So they ran that on the front page, which I think was a message to Blackwell that there are certain types of tactics that aren't going to be tolerated in this state.
Well, what about I read an editorial from the New York Times a week or so ago, Bob, that indicated that Kent Blackwell was threatening to remove Ted Strickland from the ballot?
Yeah, he really, and it was finally settled yesterday. No, I was actually in some contact with Democrats. I was trying to work out a deal where, in fact, I would be the progressive in the campaign if they threw him off, but we could work a way to figure out how I could, in fact, resign and not allow, you know, 55% or 60% of the people of Ohio to be
disenfranchised. Yeah.
Sure. So, but that one quietly dropped away. You know,
but every sleazy thing in the book, it seems like, has been done in Ohio. I remember in 2004 when there were issues over voter registrations being on the wrong weight of paper, for the love of God.
Well, that was a ruling from Ken Blackwell. He found an old law that said that unless you were registered on 80 bond white unwaxed paperweight, that your registration didn't count. So what he did is he actually returned just tens of thousands of people's registration. Of course, the registrations that were returned were essentially, again, in the urban areas.
Yeah, because all the white people got it right and happened to have some 80-pound unwaxed paper laying around.
Well, his own office had 60 bond weight when it was measured. So he didn't even have the correct weight himself. And most boards of election had 20 bond weight because, you know, it's that old thick cardboard stock that you used before computers. Everyone uses 20 bond now, the standard weight, because you want to scan the registrations into the database.
Yeah, and that becomes a real pain for, you know, things like document feeders.
Sure, sure, it jams them all up.
Well, of course, you're in the home of dear old Diebold. what about the machine computer voting status of Ohio right now? Is it
Well, you know, there's over 47 counties, might be a little over right now, but 47 that have the Diebold DREs. Ken Blackwell wanted them all to have touchscreen Diebold machines. Diebold's, you know, doing a lot of things in Ohio. In 04, they accidentally threw off 8,000 to 10,000 voters in the city of Cleveland in their electronic polling system. Also, in Toledo, they probably cost Kerry 7,000 votes when their OptiScan machines unexpectedly froze up on Election Day. The big fear with Diebold is all these cards are being encrypted by the Secretary of State's office. The Diebold DREs have those kind of personal, small, like, credit cards for the supervisor, and then there's ways you get them for each voter. The problem, of course, was the recent Princeton experiment and test, which showed that essentially you can use one of these cards in a virus to infect and change the entire vote
right.
At a state level.
Well, what about I also read a post over at Daily Kos about a week or so ago saying that during a dejected meeting of Republican operatives, someone closer to some brain trust said, well, the fix is in Ohio because the Diebold purge has already taken place.
We've looked at that closely, and I think I haven't gone public with this, haven't written it yet, but I think I know exactly what they did. I've spent the last week trying to track this down because I intend to file suit probably next week. They're fighting us on the evidence. County, we can no longer go to a board of elections. We have to go through to a county prosecutor who treats it like a criminal case. But here's what happened.
They move fast.
Yeah, the Daily Kos posting said it was a purge, and then people checked it out, and there wasn't a purge. But they were essentially right. What appears to have happened is that HB3, the bill that was just in part declared unconstitutional, passed by the Ohio House to disenfranchise voters, has a provision in it where they send out cards, and they have a return address. Now, if these cards go back to the post office, then people's voter registration are being flagged, and they're being flagged, and they're going to be forced to vote provisionally. But the beauty of this is that Ken Blackwell's ruling from 2004 is that if you vote provisionally at your own precinct or even at your right precinct or at the right polling place, wrong precinct, where you fill out the form could, in fact, cause it to be disqualified, as well as no signature, as well as you leave off the date of birth, as well as you don't check the affirmation box, I want to vote. So there's all sorts of ways to throw off provisional voters. And I just got a researcher of mine who's working under the Free Press and Columbus Institute of Cabinet Journalism in Erie County, up by Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
The figure was somewhere around 14,000 voters out of 50,000 had been flagged to vote provisional. And you can bet that a large percentage of those, probably 30 to 40% of those aren't going to be allowed to vote. They've targeted college towns, too, in these red counties where there's a liberal arts college like Knox County where Kenyon is,
or right.
Oberlin and Miami County, and Athens, Ohio as well. And they're targeting students who have registered. So if you're still registered there but you moved your dorm room or you're living off campus, technically, you're allowed to vote in that county, but what they're going to do is flag you to vote provisional, and if you're in the wrong precinct, essentially, they're going to throw all those votes out.
This is astonishing. I mean, it seems to me, like Bob, in another era, there would have been pitchforks and torches and marches on the Capitol. Is Ohio just quietly taking this, or obviously?
Well, I think that if Blackwell down by 30 points, steals this one, I think there's going to be tremendous problems. Part of the Democratic Party, which is. And I'd been a lifelong Democrat pretty much up to the 2004 election when they wouldn't challenge the voters. I mean, one of the reasons I ended up running as an independent Green-endorsed candidate was to get standing on the ballot to sue before the election, which we have preemptively, which was my strategy and Cliff Arnebeck's strategy, and, to sue up through the election and even after the election, and also to create election protection. But the Democratic Party in Ohio, which became incredibly corporatized during the Clinton years with the DCL, that's part of the problem, is that our real allies tend to be in labor. SEIU was one of the parties that brought this lawsuit, which we just had the victory with. And the progressive clubs are very good, the Progressive Democrats of America, and Democrats for America.
And of course, you've got some of America's best progressive congressmen there in Ohio. Whether it's Dennis Kucinich,
Marcy Kaptur, Stephanie Tubbs Jones,
the youngish,
Brown.
The youngish man over was it Steubenville? I can't remember his name. Came out and just blistered George Bush on the House, stirring stuff. And yeah, that's the dichotomy of watching Ohio politics, Bob, is, you know, you've got these good progressives and frankly, a concentration of them that you don't have many other places outside California, maybe. And then at the same time, you've got this stifled, dead statewide party machine. I mean, is my impression off?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the reasons, and, you know, I mean, I had been a consistent critic. Part of the problem is the Democratic Party in Ohio, the chair in 04, you know, the guy who rose to be the chair and then he was forced out, you know, pretty much by Howard Dean. Denny White was a former Republican businessman in the 80s up until the 92 election. And then he ran as a Democrat and lost. But he took over the Franklin County Democratic Party in the capital of Columbus, and he used that as a base to take over the statewide apparatus. And what he really did early on was, you know, I was on the executive committee here in Columbus, you know, under the old party, Fran Ryan, you know, an old Irish pal who was just incredible and had a big tent. But they literally forced out the progressive wing of the party. And now, you know, because of Howard Dean and the clubs that are active beginning to rebuild their grassroots base, the most of the progressives are along the river or really up. Ohio's three states in one. You know, the South is really an Appalachian, you know, border state with 22 Appalachian counties. Then in the middle here, you know, it's more like Iowa or Indiana.
Yeah.
But the northeastern part of the state is really one of the great progressive regions in America.
Yeah, that's Michigan, more like Michigan, and a place unto itself with what, Dayton, Toledo,
Dayton,
Cleveland.
Toledo, Cleveland, those are some, Toledo and Cleveland are some of the most democratic cities in America. And that's why you can get a Dennis Kucinich and a Stephanie Tubbs Jones.
Well, you've said you were a lifelong Democrat, but you're involved in this so that you can have standing to try to protect the ballot where maybe people won't. And frankly, as a Democrat myself, Bob, I got to tell you, when it broke my heart when I watched John Kerry surrender before the troops were off the field, for all intents and purposes,
well,
in 2004.
50,000 uncounted votes after he had promised to count any vote. And the great irony, if you've read the new book by Woodward, The State of Denial, you got James Carville calling up the White House, according to Woodward, and telling his wife, Mary Matlin, that Kerry's going to camp out and fight, and he doesn't approve of it. But I always suspected his loyalties were with the Clintons. And, you know, that's when they brought Cheney in and, you know, Karl Rove and called up Ken Blackwell and did the full offensive in the media to get Kerry to concede. That's when Bob Schrum, you know, told him he wouldn't be viable, and he had the big fight with John Edwards over whether they could concede or not.
And John Edwards was begging him not to concede.
He sure was. And, I mean, part of that, if you think about just what happened on one level, I mean, there was about 139,000 votes he had lost by. Just certifying the votes, that is, just cleaning the votes up, Bush drops to 118,000. So that's without a recount and without any investigation. That's just the amount that they stole over the top. You know, 131% voter turnout in Clyde, Ohio, where they accidentally ran the absentees through twice, 124% in one precinct in Perry County, 120%. In another Perry County.
I always remember Gahanna, Ohio.
Yeah, Gahanna Ward 1B, 638 people vote at a church affiliated with Jerry Falwell. And lo and behold, a miracle occurs and 4,258 votes
come
up for the president.
That's a high-quality miracle, Bob.
Yeah, we like to call that the loaves and fishes.
That was exactly the thing that came to my mind. So I mean, are you just going to keep up a full court press between now and November 7th and on afterward? Is that the strategy?
We're seeing some results. Is that a lot of, you know, I mean, when we first began to write about this stuff, you know, I have a PhD in political science. When we first began to write about it, you know, everyone called us conspiracy theorists. But, you know, we're the only people that have actually looked at the public records and looked at the ballot. And I think it is having some effect, you know. In part, you know, we were much more respected when we were saying this stuff out on the coast. But I think the Ohio Democrats are getting it now. I think after tremendous resistance, you know, this kind of enabling denial over the, you know, this kleptocracy in the state, you know, these people that compulsively steal, I think they now get it and they're beginning to move, which is a good sign for everybody.
Oh, it absolutely is. At some point, do you plan on going back and being a Democrat again?
Yeah, you know, I was on attempt at this time. The Move On people had me listed as their third choice to run for Congress in the 12th District after the mayor and a very popular city council person. And it was all on the voting rights stuff. So, you know, if we can open up some space within the party, you know, it really depends on whether or not there's a variety of other issues, too. I mean, well, yeah, we were squashed when we, you know, tried to get resolutions against the war. So it wasn't just the voting issue prior to that. It
right.
was, you know, the war issue and the torture issue and the warrantless spying issue. You know,
the torture issue that Dick Cheney has now confessed to.
Sure.
You know, oh, my God. Well, let me ask you more of a philosophical question as we wrap up, Bob. And I've really enjoyed this conversation. Greens, you know, a lot of well-intentioned people in my book. Mm-hmm. And I fault the Democratic Party for not sufficiently reaching out to some people who are highly motivated. But by the same token, Is it that perceived no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, two sides of the same coin thing that keeps people in the green movement as opposed to, because frankly their energies could be well used in the Democratic side of the fight?
Well, you know, I think part of the problem, and I'm one of these people that, you know, I reluctantly voted for Kerry in 2004, although I swore when he authorized force in Iraq that I wouldn't.
Yeah,
but the Greens weren't on the ballot here. And a lot of it is sort of, you know, I mean, how do you sit through a presidential debate where, you know, the debate essentially is Bush saying, stay the course, we have enough troops, and Kerry suggesting that we needed more.
Yeah, stay the course, send more troops.
Right. So, I mean, that's the type of activity. I also remember they put out a kind of a survey of 10 key votes, from the tax cuts to, you know, to choice to the estate tax and a variety of thing. And you know, Kerry had a 20% rating. I mean, even yeah. General Clark was at 50%.
Right.
So,
well, you know,
and Howard Dean, of course, was like at 70. So your thinking is, how much difference is there on the great issues of the day, from, you know, from Iraq to the estate tax to, you know, to the income tax, if Kerry, you know, except on choice, and I think it was the second wave of tax cuts, voted with the president on virtually everything.
Well, I've got a list of, and it's saved in my computer, the list of 13 Democrats who voted in favor of the torture bill. And
shockingly, one was my good friend Sherrod Brown.
Well, you know, but I can almost give away that vote in the House.
Well, yeah, because you know they already had the commercial.
Yeah, it was in the can and it was ready to go.
Sure.
But I can't explain it on behalf of people like Jay Rockefeller, who's not even running for re-election right now.
Hmm.
I can't explain it on behalf of Bill Nelson, who doesn't, Catherine Harris, her and the snowball in hell have an equal chance of beating Bill Nelson. I can't explain it for Ben Nelson. I can't explain it for Joe Lieberman. But I understand the frustration there. But at some point, does it not become incumbent upon real, live, honest-to-God progressives to get in there on the grassroots level and run for county executive committee, take it back from these tired old corporatist ward healers and you know, like that?
Well, yeah, considering I once was a Democratic ward healer, but I was never tired. I was the only white in Columbus history to be a ward healer in a majority. So, no, I think you're right. That's what I did, and you know, back in the 1990s, and you know, we put a lot of energy into the party. You know, my approach is really an inside-outside strategy. You know, I think the Green Party, if they're going to have any success, it's going to be at the local campus area, often in rural counties where the Democrats have given up. So my big agenda is to push progressives.
Right, and you know, that's the thing. I think it's valuable to have progressive members of Congress, but in many ways, Bob, I'm of the opinion that if you've got progressive members of the city council or a progressive mayor or a progressive county commissioner or you know, a progressive county prosecutor, circuit judge, whatever, if you've got 500 of them, I'll take them over one progressive congressman.
Yeah, and again, that's where a lot of the action is. I've been also working with townships, very rural township governments that just hate these corporate farm outfits, you know, the massive hog farms and the chicken farms. And
yeah,
we're making all sorts of environmental inroads with them just on zoning issues and self-rules, allowing them to use their township charters to, you know, fight against essentially the destruction of their entire county.
Well, I think that's a very wise strategy, Bob. And again, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I hope you'll keep us updated on your fight.
I will. And it is a fight, and we're all in it together, and it is a progressive struggle. And I think we're going to prevail here in Ohio.
I really do think you will. But you're going to, this is like having an unrepentant burglar serving as. Serving as your hired help around the house. You really got to count the silver every night.
No, I think so. And again, they're going to steal until we stop them. And I think now the awareness is out there. And I appreciate conversation being on your show. It's been fun.
It has been fun. You take care, all right? And
all
best
right,
of luck.
You too.
And, you know, you're going to have a little vote count out there, and I congratulate you on it.
Thank you.
Hopefully they won't steal those from you.
Well, what I'm thinking is, the last thought, I just hope, at this point it's good, because if it got too close, I would have had to denounce myself and vote for Strickland.
Yeah, that's like, what is that? That's the end of that movie Mooseport.
Right.
All right, Bob Petrakis, right. Thank you very kindly. Have a great evening and a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now. All right, it's time for the news. We'll come back and take your phone calls. A couple of lines open, 877-443-2366. I have this thing with the Greens. You know, I really, really respect their passion, and I really want a Democratic organization that will reach out to them and channel and work with those passions, because it's so important. And frankly, a lot of the Green vision is the vision that should be the Democratic Party vision, isn't it? This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and the U.S. ambassador issued a joint statement today reaffirming Iraq's commitment to a strong relationship with the U.S. The announcement followed a controversy over policy earlier this week when al-Maliki said that the U.S. had no right to impose timetables on his country. Today he said that, quote, issues must be resolved with timelines. The U.S. military reported today that one more U.S. soldier has died in Iraq, bringing the death toll so far this month to 97. In Morocco next week, the U.S. and Russia will lead a meeting to address nuclear terrorism. The participating countries, including Britain, China, France, Germany, Japan, and Italy, will discuss how to keep extremist groups from obtaining nuclear materials. In New Hampshire, Republican Senator John McCain said today that the U.S. should send 20,000 more troops to Iraq. He also reiterated that he opposes a quick U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. NBC News reports that in the Persian Gulf, coalition naval forces are on heightened alert. British authorities have cited a possible al-Qaeda threat against oil refineries in the Gulf. Saudi Arabia is also taking precautions to protect its interests. U.S. forces in Baghdad are still searching for a U.S. soldier who was kidnapped earlier this week. They've reportedly cordoned off the area around Sadr City, a slum controlled by the anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, as they continue their search. Near Paris, protesters torched two empty passenger buses today as demonstrations marking the one-year anniversary of riots in immigrant neighborhoods continued for the second day. 4,000 police are standing by. In the West Bank today, Israeli forces killed three Palestinians on a raid in a refugee camp. Near Palm Springs, brush and winds continue driving the Esperanza blaze, which has now spread over nearly 24,000 acres. Four firefighters were killed when the flames engulfed their fire engine. Authorities say that the fire was started deliberately, and the Associated Press reports that a $300,000 reward is being offered for information leading to the arsonist capture. On Monday, the first ever UN Global Summit on the Internet will convene in Greece. 1,200 international delegates and policymakers will meet to discuss, among other issues, the U.S. control over Internet addressing protocols. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today.
Now, it'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Health Department officials now say that wild pigs may be responsible for tracking E. coli bacteria into a California spinach field in August. The outbreak killed three people and sickened hundreds. The Commerce Department reported today that the gross domestic product, the broadest measure of the economy, grew at only 1.6% in the third quarter. But the Commerce Department also reported that consumer spending rose 3.1%. That suggests a low GDP number had more to do with a slowdown in the housing market than a broad economic slowdown. The University of Michigan Survey of Consumer Sentiment found that
U.S. consumers' mood brightened in October, mostly because of lower gasoline prices. Consumer spending makes up two-thirds of economic activity in the U.S. United and American Airlines have both raised their fares by $6 on some round-trip flights to offset high fuel prices. Southwest Airlines said it will not go along with the fare.
The oil company. In Georgia, a reminder for most of the U.S. to move your clocks back by 1 hour. The official time change happens on Sunday at 2 a.m. Light sweet crude settled at $60.75 today. And at the close of Wall Street this week,
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Coming up on 9 minutes after the hour. And I hope that it sounds, talking with Bob Petraeus, it sounds a lot like, among other things, among the other good things that Howard Dean is doing with the Democratic Party, is that he is trying to accomplish that outreach to Greens and the more progressives. Because I mentioned something Wednesday evening, and that is this eternal, and every time, mark my words, every time that we start trying to operate on some Republican principle, we Democrats, liberals, progressives, decent people, we get screwed. Because Republican principles are indecent principles based upon indecent actions, based upon immoral philosophies. And that's gonna run headlong into everything that we believe in. Yes, we have become far more successful at raising money from the same corporate SOBs that the Republicans do. And yes, it takes money. But look at the response to that issue. The corporatist DLC types thought that the response, the proper response, was to start working the same side of the political street as the Republicans. When in fact the proper response to that is more along the lines of what Howard Dean did with his grassroots fundraising effort. You know, the response to filthy corporate money in politics is not to try to get some of the filthy corporate money. The response to filthy corporate money in politics is to enact public funding of political campaigns. Or at least that seems reasonable to me. Let's do go to the phones. Gail is calling from Florida. Hey, Gail, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Bob.
How you doing?
Doing okay. It's a great interview you had with Bob from Ohio. I hope he calls back often and keeps you informed.
I hope he will, too. He's doing great work up there.
Bob, don't know if it's been happening everywhere else in the nation, but here in Florida, the last, I guess probably the last 2 weeks, we've had at least four school lockdowns where they locked kids up. Somebody's carrying a gun or something. We did have I think it was in Titusville, a student got knifed and killed in school the other day.
I read about that.
It just seems with all the stuff that the kids being shook down all the time that they're just going to get used to it.
Well, I think they're supposed to. I mean, I don't think you have to be some sort of a conspiracy theorist or a paranoid to think that's the thrust of the authoritarian mindset.
It's so troublesome.
You know, what was it? Hitler said, "We don't worry about you because we've already got your children." I'm paraphrasing, but something along those lines.
Right.
If you can get the younger set to think the way you want them to, then your job is half done. And the fact that, you know, I'm 43 years old and very, very progressive has something to do with who got to me somewhere along the way, I suppose. And it's odd that it would have happened in Northwest Alabama, but there was somewhere along the way I got influenced by a liberal vision. I think my parents had a lot to do with that, but I also think having some people who actually believed in government had something to do with that.
I think you can also grow up into it a little bit. I remember reading the Harpers the other day, and in the end of their books, they mentioned that teenagers are incapable of being considerate. And I think consideration is something that you learn when you get older, and care of other people.
Well, I think you're probably right to a certain extent, although, you know, things can happen to young people. I mean, I for several years, I
happening all the time.
Yeah, I carried groceries every holiday season at the food bank to people who wouldn't have otherwise had groceries during the holidays.
Right.
And that opened my eyes to a whole lot. And when you see that at a young age, it makes you sensitive to it, and it makes you want it not to happen to other people. Or it makes you willing to try to alleviate that for folks. Or at least it did with me.
Also, you know, you're talking about the Greens. I've known a lot of Greens around here in Florida, and it seems those are people that are really stay up on politics. And like you say, they're more Democratic and more liberal than Democrats are anymore.
Well, and that's the thing.
They're the people that have finally realized that this duopoly is just not doing anything for them.
Why aren't we reaching out to them? Because one of the
reaching out to them, we need to be joining them, Bob.
Gail, I want to, but I'll be dead if I live to be 150. I'll be dead before the Green Party is viable in the United States.
And of course, this is a Democratic precinct captain that's telling you that too.
Well, I understand completely, but the thing is, if they, you know, the minute that a third party becomes viable, it just becomes the second party. I mean, it's just basic. It's some sort of basic math.
Well, we need a second party.
We do. We desperately do. And again, that comes back to this notion of trying to reach out and get that so-called independent or that elusive moderate voter, that undecided vote. Listen, if you live in the United States and you're inundated with all these political advertisements, and at this point in time you're undecided.
Oh, really?
You know, you shouldn't be left alone with sharp knives or allowed to operate heavy equipment. I mean, it seems axiomatic to me. Appeal to the Greens, appeal to the people who are going to get their feet on the street and get out there and work and go knock on doors and phone bank and talk and who aren't afraid to talk to their neighbors or the next person in line at the grocery store or at the gas pump. Those are the people to motivate, because those people will affect change, and that will dramatically cut the amount of the statistical amount of those people who are so-called undecideds. Because I think most undecideds are just liars. I think they're persnickety, hard-nosed, mulish, stubborn people.
They're just trying to avoid confrontation.
Well, I'm not going to tell you. You know, I've done exit polling, at precincts, and you know, you stand your 250 feet away, and you walk up very carefully and very gently, and you say, "Listen, I don't want to know your name. Just you know, write down who you voted for, fold it over. I don't want to see it. Just going to put it over here, not going to look at it. I'll never know it. Nobody will ever know. But we just, you know, this is just an exit poll. Well, I ain't going to tell you who I voted for." And, you know, that's the same crowd that says, "Well, I ain't decided yet." They've decided, but they think you're being nosy. And pollsters, for some reason or another, don't understand that. But, you know, I mean, it's I don't know. That's my take on the human nature of it, Gail. I could be wrong. I'm sure there's a mathematician out there that'll tell me, no, these people really haven't decided. They're going to flip a coin when they get to the voting booth. And if that's the case, I'm scared to death, because democracy's dead. You know, if we're going to find out whether or not the Mississippi Gulf Coast can be rebuilt and people's lives can be returned to a semblance of normalcy based on some dude in West Armpit, Kansas flipping a coin when he gets to the voting, we're screwed, Gail.
Well,
does that make any sense?
Oh, it absolutely does. The Republicans and their great moral values. You know, we got Charlie Crist here in Florida. Been a couple reports out lately about him being gay, and he's denying it on some of the radio stations. I'm not gay or whatever. There's a libertarian who's also running for governor against him, a guy by the name of Max Lynn, who has said that he talked to Charlie about 20 years ago, and Charlie admitted to being a bisexual. So, of course, Charlie now is telling everybody, "No, I'm not gay."
That's just,
what
you know,
saying is, I'm a bisexual.
Well, a bisexual is just somebody who is absolutely scared to death they're not going to have a date on Saturday, and they're keeping all options open. I'm sorry. That's you know, I think, who is it that's running against Charlie Crist? Gail, help me here.
Jim Davis is a Democrat.
Yeah.
Max Lynn is a libertarian, and there's a couple others that I can't even.
You know, I think if I was Jim Davis, the first thing I'd do politically, with all this Charlie Crist is gay stuff, I'd have an ad out that says, you know, "I'm Jim Davis. I'm running for governor. I'm a Democrat. And I frankly don't give a tinker's damn whether Charlie Crist is gay or not. That's why I'm a Democrat. We believe that human rights are human rights, and they don't have anything to do with what goes on when the light goes off. And gay or straight, after this election, Charlie Crist, you will always be welcome in my home. And I don't care who you marry. I hope to get an invitation to the wedding, whether you're marrying a guy or a girl."
Well, I'll be seeing Jim Davis tomorrow, and I'll pass it on to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, please do. I mean, I think that's the way you respond to that kind of stuff.
I think that's a good response, Bob.
Because the Democrats cannot. Anybody who tries to use sexuality coming from a Democratic perspective is no Democrat in my book, Gail. Because that's bigotry, and it's bigotry if it's got a D behind its name, and it's bigotry if it's got an R behind its name.
Oh, I understand that. Just the hypocrisy of the Republican Party and their moral values, and their coming out against the unions, civil unions,
yeah.
and trying to make it outlawed. It's just hate stuff. It's just hate.
Precisely, and that is the point. It's not the sex. It's the hypocrisy.
That's why I wanted to bring it out to you tonight, Bob.
Well, thank you, Gail. You have a great weekend, all right?
You too, and give that woman a break, you are. She sounds like she's fixing to kick over.
Oh, yeah, she gets the break. No, I'm sorry.
We love you, Gail.
She's stabbing me with a pen. No, she's getting a break, Gail, I promise.
Hugs all the way around. Y'all have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Bye now. I mean, does that work for you? Democrats do not challenge someone's ability to govern based upon how they have sex. We challenge someone's ability to govern based upon their fundamental competence. You know, if you're a fundamentalist and your chief political advisor is going to be a gossipy water moccasin, you don't have any business in government. If you're going to wait for those still small voices to talk to you inside your head, you don't need to be in government. You need to be, you know, in the pharmacy getting your prescription filled. But if it's how you have sex, so what? On to the Spike. Hey, Spike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Gonzo greetings there.
Gonzo greetings to you, man. What's up?
Hey, well, first thing I got to say is if it's raining this weekend, make sure Agnes wears her garbage bag raincoat. This way she doesn't get a worse cold.
Absolutely, I will.
and only three people right now get that joke, probably.
Well, I'm one of them.
Yeah. But, oh, and also, by the way, I mentioned in the chat room I was holding off on call until I heard Worst Person in the World on Overman, and take a wild guess who got it.
Limbaugh?
No, a bigger surprise, but quite fittingly, really, Dennis Miller.
Oh, yeah, because he came out with what, yeah. Yeah, he earned that one, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, so he got it tonight, and... Overman, he really ripped into him to the point mentioning this is a guy that couldn't keep a syndicated show on the air for 6 months when he was still funny, and made sure he mentioned he's former comedian Dennis Miller. So he took a few good shots at Dennis Miller. So once again, another entertaining night from Mr. Overman. If nothing else, that one little segment is worth tuning in for with that show.
Oh, I love that segment. Yeah. It's one of the more refreshing things in television right now.
Yeah.
Of course, the whole show is.
And speaking of which, he used the phrase you use all the time when they were talking about Rick Santorum. He called him Man on Dog Santorum.
Well, you know, it kind of amazed me. I mean, you're a religious watcher of Olbermann. Did you see Loretta Nall from Alabama on his show a couple of nights ago?
I may have.
This is the one, she's got, I think, the libertarian endorsement, and she's an independent. She's running on some pretty significant issues, but she has been accosted in the press for her mammary glands. And so she responded by saying, putting out a T-shirt that had a picture on it and said, vote for these boobs and not for those boobs, and put the pictures of several Alabama politicians on it. Well, she shows up on Olbermann's show the other night, and, you know, it was only 4 months ago that we had her on here. It tickles me to death, Spike. I love being in front of the curve.
Yeah, well, there's been many exclusives on the Head-On Network there. But NBC National News ran stories about the flood in Easton, and people heard it on Head-On Radio before NBC actually came out with the report. So.
You know, it's one of the cool things about being the so-called new, independent media or the new media. You know, we're the media that people who want real media can tune into.
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing. He showed, I never heard of Current TV until tonight. He showed a clip from Current TV of waterboarding so that people can understand what they're talking about when they say waterboarding, because he was talking about Cheney more or less saying, you know, I'm not saying, but I'm saying about the whole issue.
Well, was it that scene from Jacob the Liar, or was it the real mock-up?
It looked kind of like a real mock-up.
It wasn't Robin Williams on the board.
No. It was you couldn't see the guy in the orange suit on the board's face, and you know, the guys doing it, of course, were wearing ski masks, and it looked pretty legit. Like somehow someone found some I don't know, training footage, And he had someone that's a civil rights expert lawyer and talking about how it's a war crime. It's also evil. So.
Yeah, and it's something that's practiced by brass-bound SOBs, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
If you have ever, and this is just me, Spike, so feel free to disagree, but the way I look at it is if you have ever participated in a waterboarding incident, you have earned or you have forfeited the right to be considered a member of civilized society.
In my opinion, you have at least earned the right to no longer be considered an American citizen taking part in an act like, you know, if you or I were to join a mercenary group, you know, let's look back to the days when, you know, the Republican Party thought there was nothing wrong with Eastern Europe while civil wars erupted, and they were mercenaries there. Those mercenaries, you know, soldier of fortune would even say back then, were, you know, if they dealt with the Americans, would be considered an enemy combatant. Yet, the tactics of a mercenary enemy combatant and what some of these guys in intelligence are doing are one and the same. You know, how is it right for one guy to do it, but not the other guy?
Well, it's more that Animal Farm stuff. You know, some pigs are, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, put someone in a white coat in a room and tell people to zap one another. You know, I don't understand why someone could be so foolish myself to go along with that. You know, there comes a time you have to disobey orders. But
I'd like to think that. You know, I wish there was a. I don't know how you'd create the organization, but somebody out there who would provide information to members of the U.S. military about just exactly how serious it is, how serious a portion of the law it is that they do not have to obey illegal orders.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a big difference between private, go move that sand pile from point A to point B, and it being utterly pointless and stupid, and private, go dig a hole and put that living human being in it up to his neck and start the lawnmower. That's an illegal order. But the thing is, these kids that go through basic, Spike, they get the lecture about what is and isn't a war crime and what is and isn't an illegal order somewhere about 2 minutes after they've gotten back from the 30-mile hike and a minute before chow.
Yeah.
They don't. The military structure of the United States doesn't want these kids understanding what an illegal order is.
Yeah, the only ones that are supposed to know that are the higher-up officers who generally are not charged also, case in point, the prison. But, you know, by the way, our own government and our own president set the precedent with the line, you know, we were just following orders, won't be accepted. Well, that's the noose they've tied for themselves in reality if someone was smart enough to catch on to that. I mean, by him saying that to invade a country, that means if he is not abiding by that, his own plan and mission, he has truly failed. That's maybe the greatest measure right there of his incompetence at work. You know, I hope after time and things come out and people finally get upset enough to do something, that line in particular is used against the administration for what they did. You know, essentially, everybody that's done everything wrong should get burned on that phrase alone. You know, just like the no new taxes line his old man used.
Yeah, read my lips.
Yeah, I think that the we were just following orders should be used against him. Yeah, I mean, but then again, he has so many lines we could get him on. It's stupid, you know what he says. From the stuff you'll hear on the Daily Show and Letterman to the stuff that you only really hear on shows like this or maybe C-SPAN, he's a never-ending soundbite of stupidity. But certainly I think that's one that he could best define the hypocrisy of his entire war on terrorism.
Did you see this story today? It came out from Agence France-Presse, Spike. It turns out the day after that Dick Cheney confesses that we're still waterboarding and everybody else can, knows what they can go and do to themselves, the same thing he told Patrick Leahy to do to himself, It turns out the day after that Cheney admits that we're still torturing people by I loved it. NBC listed it as Cheney says we are performing simulated drownings. Today, a headline from Agence France, confession that formed base of Iraq war. Get ready for this, Spike. You're going to scream. Confession that formed base of Iraq war was acquired under torture.
And gee, it didn't work. You know, there's a shocker. It didn't work. I never would have guessed that would happen. And, aside from the fact that even the British started to learn that after a while, it took them quite a long time, too. And they still don't quite understand that it's not just the Irish that lie to you when you torture them. There's a long history of it just not working. I mean, hell, I think the Nazis figured that one out rather quickly. Sadly, they might have figured it out quicker than some more legitimate government. You're not going to get the information you're looking for when you do that.
No, if you want the information you're looking for, honest to God, you give the guy everything he wants.
Yeah, well, you know, only place in the world that type of information gathering works is on the show 24, which, by the way, is beyond fiction, considering, one, it works there, and two, they have equipment that works in research and stuff there that we don't really have in the real world. That's the only place in the world that works is fiction. And sadly, we have an administration who lives in a world of fiction because they've never had to live a single day in reality. Case in point, our commander-in-chief. If we had people who lived the real world, or at least fought in real wars, as bad as some of these guys are who are veterans that are in Washington, at least they would be a little more clued into reality. I mean, as much as John McCain caved, he's usually still the one moaning about these things over and over. That's a big problem with their whole little party politics in that party. But there's a reason he's moaning about following these rules. These are the rules that are being violated against him at one time. It's ridiculous he caves on them, but isn't that interesting? People like Cheney, who never did anything, have no problem with violating these rules.
Well, but the thing is, these brutal monsters, Spike, have never been near pain. The worst pain Cheney has ever had has been a heart attack.
Maybe the one in his rear end that also is called the president would be up there too. But
there's a reason he got those 5 deferments from Vietnam, Spike. He didn't want to ever feel pain. He didn't want to feel the pain of a 5-mile hike in basic. He didn't want to feel the pain of mosquito bites in the jungle in Vietnam. He didn't want to feel the pain of the anti-malarial vaccinations or the smallpox vaccinations or anything else that he would have got. It's about the avoidance of pain.
Yeah, well, and you know who else was the king of that? Would be who it turns out is the mentor to Mr. Cheney, the one and only parasite, and Henry Kissinger. I don't recall Henry Kissinger having much of a military background, but boy, oh boy, did he certainly use the military for his own little world and his own little plans for cutting up the globe and however he felt necessary. Unless I'm wrong, I don't believe he ever served a day in the military. And look at all the people he has bombed, all the governments he has overthrown, all the people he supported to torture.
Yeah, well, if you look at the what would you call that? The micro effects of U.S. foreign policy, because you can throw out things like, we killed 1 million Vietnamese civilians, and it kind of numbs your mind. But if you see that photograph of that one little naked girl running down the road, suddenly 1 million, that repeated 1 million times becomes a different kind of math that it's almost offensive to your brain to contemplate.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope before he dies, eventually someone in the world, and it'll just never happen. He's too connected. Well, I'll even give Cheney and Bush a free pass if it could bring in Henry Kissinger, who is the most hideous of them all. And
Put him on trial.
That revelation, which is no shocker, really, seeing what this administration is doing, that Cheney has been advised by him basically throughout the whole thing. I don't think there's anyone who's been worse to this country and this world in any one lifetime than him.
Well, in recent history, at least. I mean, Kissinger, he's like the Cub Scout version of Joseph Stalin.
I think he could be worse because more people knew what Joseph Stalin did. I think he's been better at covering his tracks and making himself very popular. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if many years later when history finally can do the numbers that a lot more people died under his watch. I mean, heck, the Pinochet overthrow alone, God knows how many people were killed from that one incident. I mean, there's plenty more with, I think, East Timor getting bombed like there was no tomorrow. It goes on and on with him, what he was behind it many times. The Cambodian attacks,
Yeah, the incursions into Laos. It goes on and on and on, and nobody ever even tried to slow him down.
Yeah, I mean, after a while, Stalin's own people saw what he was doing. The American people just are still clueless to Kissinger. Yeah, they know Kissinger more as a bit by Belushi on Saturday Night Live than they know for what he was really doing.
Yeah.
You know, which is just...
Or my favorite film, Dr. Strangelove. Mein Führer, I can walk!
Yeah, he is certainly a character from a horror film of some sort. And in a way, you got Dr. Strangelove, you can connect to him, and you can directly connect Full Metal Jacket to him. So, if not now, Stanley Kubrick got some good films out of.
The Dr. Strangelove character really was based on Kissinger.
Yeah, well,
if I understand it correctly. Kubrick had him as a professor, or somebody associated with Kubrick had him with it for a professor, and turned Peter Sellers. But the character was lifted in whole, and dropped right in that wheelchair. You know, with the misbehaving arm that keeps wanting to give the Nazi salute.
And real quick, speaking of misbehaving and bodily movements. The comedian himself, Rush Limbaugh. When is this guy going to learn to just shut up when everyone's telling? And the worst part of all is, if you notice, no one in the big media ever knocks him down because he's always that fringe nut that can go and say, listen to what this nut's saying.
Yeah, the fringe nut that Katie Couric invited on to do the first free speech segment.
Yeah, exactly. They seem to... Which goes to show just how ignorant he is. He doesn't even realize he's being exploited by these individuals, really.
Well, see, but I'm guilty of something here. I mean, real bad guilty, Spike, because Rush knows that the oldest maxim of all celebrity is there is no such thing as bad PR.
Yeah, well...
And he has been getting it by the bucketful at a time when he was... being best remembered for being a guy who was junked up on OxyContin and got caught with a pocket full of Viagra on a boys-only trip to the Dominican Republic.
And that further goes to prove that the FCC should have went after him and not Howard Stern for saying penis or, you know, innuendos, you know, having farting contests. You know, I heard a little bit of that the other night with that, And that's what I wonder is how is it that something lowbrow and really obviously lowbrow, not trying to hide under the cloak of being intelligent, intellectual radio, how that was something that got everyone fired up and, you know, the government had to move in on that and, you know, groups had to write letters. Where are these holy rollers that write letters about Howard Stern? Where are they writing letters about people like Rush Limbaugh saying these?
That would be they're not writing letters.
Exactly. Yeah. Where are they with Michael Weiner, when Michael Weiner's saying that mentally challenged people should be fixed so they can't reproduce? Yeah. Where are these, quote, Christians and people of the Lord then? You know, a fart joke or an oral sex reference. Oh, look out, everybody. But, you know, something as heinous as basically supporting Nazism. Sweep that under the rug. It's like the priest that molested the boys. Don't worry about it. about.
Yeah, we did that because we were molested by a priest.
Yeah. Oh.
Who was drunk?
Yeah. Well, it always it, the Republican Party always comes back to I was drunk. I'm perfectly sane, sober, but when I'm drunk, I'm a pervert.
Yeah, it's the only thing the Republican Party ever got out of all that all the fun that's there to be had listening to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. The only thing the Republican Party ever got out of Dark Side of the Moon was the one line. I don't know. I was really very drunk at the time. That's all they got. They missed the whole lyric to Money. I don't know. I was really very drunk at the time.
Well, jeez. Maybe they know there isn't really no dark side of the moon. Matter of fact, the whole moon is dark.
True enough. You have a great weekend, all right?
You too.
All right, later. And onward to our good friend David in Maine. Hey, David, you still there?
Yeah, good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. You?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I wasn't going to call in for a while, but, you know, this news of this Cheney waterboarding thing, it just got to me because I was like, I really can't believe that we can still argue this. I really don't believe we can still debate this. And one of the things that interests me was, I don't know if you saw, did you mention Situation Room tonight? Because I don't have
No,
to
I didn't.
Yet.
I didn't.
Well, Lynn Cheney was on Situation Room. And surprisingly, guess who stood up? Wolf Blitzer. And he rattled her like you wouldn't believe when they were talking about the Jim Webb incident. Says, but you have a book called Sisters. And boy, oh boy, Lyndon Tate Kailanetti, she was like, well, that's lies and distortion.
That she's got a book called Sisters is a lie?
Oh, you know about the book, right?
Oh, gosh, yes. I read big old excerpts from it on the air once upon a time.
Surprisingly, that was an interesting thing. She started going on and on about Wolf Blitzer emboldening the enemy. About what they were showing on CNN. She goes, I used to work at CNN. And it's this dictating attitude. But, you know, something that I found funny, that Lionel mentioned on his show, that I think somebody in the mainstream media needs to mention, emboldening the enemy. When you show Osama tapes and you loop them on a cable TV, you're emboldening the enemy.
Well, you're certainly showing him what he needs to do to get his PR out, aren't you?
Right. And I just thought to myself, I thought, Lynn is so clueless, she doesn't even realize.
Well, I love the fact that they're having to drag her out to defend Dick and George now.
Well, you
because
know,
they dragged Laura out to defend
that
George.
That segues into what I was going to talk about tonight, which is the Tony Snow, how he explains the waterboarding thing.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that, but
you saw a little bit of that?
Yeah.
He says, Tony, your argument that, he says, I'll tell you, how can you really make that argument? I'll tell you what he said. He was asked the question, you dunk somebody's head in the water to save a life. This is a no-brainer. And also, if you read the rest of the answer, the vice president, who earlier had also been asked about torture, he said, we don't torture. Let me give you the no-brainers here. Yeah, that's exactly right. They are no-brainers. No-brainer number one is we don't torture. No-brainer number two, we don't break the law, our own or international law. No-brainer number three, the vice president doesn't give away questioning techniques. And number four, the administration does believe in legal questioning techniques of known killers whose questioning can in fact be used to save American lives. The vice president says he was talking in general terms about a questioning program that is legal to save American lives, and he was not referring to waterboarding. You know, this is so damn stupid that I don't even know where to begin with this. And it just reminds me the fact that if Tony is so smart, I don't think he's like good at statistics and probability. But the probability is someone, you're torturing someone and you're saving American lives. If that's true, if it's ever true in any instance, and God knows it could be in the universe.
It's the infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters, and one of them does Hamlet at some
point.
Yeah, that.
But the problem is with this, is when you are torturing somebody, how can you be saving a life when you're affecting a life? And if this person lives, and if their family, and you're risking it, if their family is a vengeful family, which
which the probability is it's pretty high in a place like the Middle East. These are customs. Avenge. It's like the Sopranos.
Yeah.
They don't care. their country's under siege. And to me, I just keep thinking, don't they know? I don't think they understand. I don't think if you explain zero-sum game to them, they wouldn't understand that. They would just look at you with a blank face and go, what do you mean zero-sum game?
Yeah, that's beyond them. I mean, that's...
They can't figure... It's
one of those liberal math classes that they never took.
Right. I mean, they're the type of... I think they're the type of administration that would get lost in, like, the first minute of a David Mamet movie. Wait a minute, who's who?
Yeah, what is it, Mulholland Falls?
No,
that's David Lynch, sorry, wrong.
Yeah, House of Games. Wait a minute, okay. What's going on here? Is this guy an enemy combatant? Wait a minute. And I mean, that's the thing we're dealing with. And you know, I saw something today that really alarmed me. Michael Ware was talking about how the IEDs are getting out of control there. I noticed it only takes one IED now to blow up a Bradley tank.
Yeah, they're building them better.
I know, they're building them better.
The bombs, not the tanks.
Right, and he mentioned that the reason why they're building them better is because you have a lot of operatives of Saddam's army who they fired when they had them as police force and said, well, you can't do that because you guys are Ba'athists.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about this? I mean... What's worse, Bob, Ba'athist or completely cannibalist anarchist? I mean, I'll take the Ba'athist.
Well, you make a pretty, yeah.
And this is the problem that I don't think people understand. This is the problem I have with libertarians in general, too, because libertarians and neoconservatives, they walk on the same kind of line. In a way, they do, because they want to get rid of government completely. This is what they keep saying. And I keep saying, don't you understand, whenever I talk to a libertarian or I have a discussion on a message board, don't you understand, if you destroy government, we don't have 100 million people in this country anymore. Don't you understand? We have over 300 million people in this country, and we need an infrastructure, and they have become conditioned to this society. You can't just switch when you want to.
But a libertarian says, you know, it's all survival of the fittest.
Yeah, they say it's all survival of the fittest, but what they don't really realize is these libertarians are probably the first ones to go, wait a minute, I was just kidding, bring back government.
Save me. It's like the old Bible verse, or they're going to be the first to holler, Lord, Lord.
I was listening to a Man Cow today. Because he's the most famous libertarian on talk radio,
right.
I guess. And he was saying how...
Well, no, that would be Bortz, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Mancow's ratings, I would say, are more higher than Bortz.
Yeah, you're probably right, yeah.
And I guess because of his stance on drugs, he's not going to get invited to the White House or anything like that. But when he was talking about the movie Death of a President, he just kept telling about how shameful it is. And he never saw the damn movie.
Oh, no. And if you go to the Death of a President website,
yeah.
they've got a list of movie reviews, and it says, reviews by people who have seen it. And then there's another link that says, reviews by people who haven't. And you've got, you know, Hillary Clinton, it's reprehensible.
And, you know, the thing is, these people make me want to see this movie now. I don't understand the promotion that they're giving.
Well, that's the way that Band in Boston is supposed to work, David.
These people are so stupid. This independent film would be just buried by the mainstream box office coming out. It would be literally buried. And what they're doing is they're saying, this is a shameful movie. This is the same thing they do with Osama. This is shameful. Look what he's doing. Look at this video. He's talking about jihad and caliphates. Look, let me rewind that. Did you see that? Let me rewind that. And, I mean...
It's the kind of stuff you'd expect out of 13-year-olds who got hold of a porn tape.
Absolutely.
Wind that back! Let me see that again.
And you know what's scary, Bob? I mean, my parents are friends with Lynn Cheney, but they're friends with somebody who knows Lynn Cheney, and they go to lunch. And when they came over here, I don't know if I mentioned this before...
Mm.
but this guy was a colonel, and they just kept lecturing. I mean, these people have some nerve. They lecture on what the military should be and the grand vision. And I'm thinking, wow, this is such a dystopia. These people really, really need to be seriously, all of them, the lot, sent to the military just to see what it's like. And if they can't understand that right now, as we're talking, Bob, there's a rebellion going on in the army. People are in their tents right now, and they're saying, you know what? I'm sick of this war. Me too. The same thing that's happened in Vietnam is happening in the Middle East right now.
Well, yeah, what? There were 200, and it was a real surprise, 200 or more active duty soldiers who protested publicly.
Right. And look,
2-3 days ago.
And look what Kevin Tillman said. You notice Sean Hannity didn't come out and say, hey, look what Kevin Tillman said. He didn't say anything about that. He was all obsessed about why Democrats shouldn't vote. His whole lecture of, I'm going to tell you right now, he's like mad. I'm going to tell you right now, you Democrats shouldn't vote. Don't vote.
No,
you don't know what you're doing.
He's a life support system for a haircut. Hey, David, I got to roll on, though.
No problem.
All right, have a good weekend.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
And one last phone call before we end the evening. Diana calling from Washington.
Oh, I didn't know I was getting on.
Oh, Agnes told me to put you on. I do what Agnes says.
Thank you.
She'll hit me with the skillet.
Nice conversation with Agnes, and I'm sorry to hear she has a terrible flu.
Yeah, she's got a terrible something because I can reach my hand out here and feel, and, I mean, you know, she's pretty warm.
She needs a good back rub, and she needs a lot of TLC.
I can do some of that.
Good. Well, I just wanted to call because I was, you know, perusing the Internet today, and I saw that thing about Matt Lauer. I guess that's old news, but for me, it was new that he had said that most people or a lot of people
feel
the way that Rush Limbaugh is talking about Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, didn't that just make you grit your teeth?
So sick. I said, we are going back to the Nazis. They were the ones who got rid of the people who were infirm, who were disabled, who were crippled, and now we're doing it in a verbal way rather than an actual way. And now we're waterboarding. Well, we always have been, I guess, waterboarding under Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is getting so beyond the pale, Bob. And you are so articulate and you are so good at giving it visual reality that I really appreciate you. And of course, I have to plug Mike Malloy once again.
Hey, we're all waiting for Monday, Diana.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's another reason I called. I have to go to the hospital, and I don't think I'll be able to listen to Mike. And so how can a person hear him?
Diana, if it, of course, I'm not on the inside of any of this. I know that it's my understanding that Mike has suggested that Ben Burch be allowed to archive, but frankly, that Ben Burch be in charge of the streaming. I hope I'm not talking out of school, but to the best of my knowledge, that's been a no go so far.
Uh oh. Well, I hope I can get him because I have to go up to Seattle and good grief.
It may be a for pay archive. It may be a for I don't know. I doubt if the stream will be for pay, but the archive may be. But I'm guessing. I'm simply guessing. If and I'll go out on a limb again because this isn't me plugging Ben. Because he's involved with the Head On Radio Network. This is me plugging Ben because I was a fan of Ben's before there was a horn, okay? Ben knows streaming. Ben knows archiving. Ben knows podcasting, okay? Better than anybody else out there in anything approaching progressive or liberal talk. I say frequently, Diana, that Ben is the hardest working man in liberal talk. You know, the five...
Well, I know he's got millions of hours.
Yeah, exactly. The 5 million hours of liberal talk that he has served out to all comers speaks to his abilities.
And I noticed he just got up to $10,000 on his pledge drive.
And that has been a long time coming.
I know. Well... Hey, I wanted to mention something. Have you ever seen the movie called Fog of War by Errol Morris?
It seems like I have, but I watch so many, Diana.
Yeah, it's about what's his name? He was the defense secretary under Kennedy.
McNamara?
Yeah, it's about McNamara, and he's being interviewed. And Morris does these face-on interviews with all his movies. Have you ever watched any of his movies?
Uh-uh.
The Gates of Heaven about the Pet Cemetery. Did you ever see that?
No.
Oh, that's fantastic. Roger Ebert said that's one of the best movies ever made.
Wow.
So you got to see it.
But I will.
It's got a lot of pathos and humor.
All I've got to do, Diana, is find a couple of extra hours outside of the roughly 18 that we devote to this network every day.
Well, Fog of War, if anyone hasn't seen it, it shows that these people are in their own realm of unreality. McNamara didn't seem to connect with the terror and the empathy for the soldier. I mean, it was like, and Westmoreland, all these guys, they can put Agent Orange out there and not even give it a second thought. This is a new technology, you know, just poison everybody. And now we've got that, what is it called, uranium?
Oh, depleted uranium?
Depleted uranium. I mean, 600,000.
Oh, it goes on and on and on. You know, we had a conversation a few nights ago with Heather Vokish talking about we're renewing the requirement for the anthrax shots for our soldiers that have sickened something on the order of 20,000. You know, we're not at a point where we can spare 20,000 soldiers. We're pretty much stretched thin as it is.
Yeah, my niece is a doctor of genetics who's researching anthrax down in Texas and trying to find, you know, an antidote to that. And it's very spooky, and that's all so controlled. And you know, they're always, when they talk about anthrax, they go after the scientists for crying out loud as a suspect.
It's just astonishing across the board. It is. That's the word, Diana. It's crazy.
But we've got November 7th. We're all going to grab onto that, and we're going to go forward. That's the way I feel.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I've got to believe that. I've got to.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
I just emailed Matt Lauer, and I told him that, you know, that station, baloney. It's all baloney.
And sleazy. Don't forget sleazy.
Yeah, and you know who's connected with that? Bill Gates, who's a good guy. Bill Gates.
Yeah, supposedly. But I'm sure he doesn't. He doesn't exercise anything.
Guy.
He doesn't exercise anything approaching editorial control where NBC News is concerned.
Oh, that's a shame. I don't think he'd go along with that stuff. But anyhow, well, you guys have a great weekend, and Agnes, drink lots of tea and honey. And
take care,
guys.
All right, thanks, Diana. I'm gonna crank up the chicken soup for her too.
Okay.
All right. Guys, take care.
Guys.
Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Well, that's it. A couple of other stories I'd like to have gotten to. I should mention them briefly before we go into the weekend. I mentioned one earlier, talking to Spike. We now know, based upon information by Stephen Gray in a book called Ghost Plane, that the information that convinced the people in the White House to start the war against the people of Iraq was based on torture, and it was false. Because when you're being tortured, you will say any damn thing that comes to mind. Garrison Keillor said the other day that if he was subjected to torture, he would start talking before they even heard him. He said, I'm a novelist. I do fiction. What do you want to hear? It's the story of torture. And another little headline, warships deploy around Saudi Arabia oil facilities. Coalition naval forces in the Persian Gulf are on watch for possible terror threats to oil facilities in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, Western naval officials said Friday. Here it comes. Mick Jagger, here it comes. Here it comes. Here it comes. Your 19th nervous breakdown. Agnes produced the program. John Fox engineered it. Ben Birch archives, podcasts, and streams it. Peter Godbold makes the computers behave. The moderators in the chat room make the chatters behave. I kid. You guys are great. Gene and Susan are our news ninjas at the network news blog. Thank you. You rock. All these programs happen because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and build the American dream. And they're helping to save the American dream by supporting this network. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. Truth Seekers, Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. About 7:30 past the hour. Program produced by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman announces for us. And welcome if you're listening to IE America Radio Network and its various affiliated stations, Sirius Satellite 145, RadioPower.org, or the White Rose Society.org, I believe. Dennis Kucinich next hour, so stick around for that. It's going to be fast. About 30 minutes is all his people have allocated to the program tonight. The plan is this will be a first of several appearances. Thank you for the questions that you posted at the special page on my website, MikeMalloy.com, that our webmaster, Mark Marshall, put up there, yesterday? We have more than enough questions to fill up the time allocated by the Kucinich campaign, so thank you very much.